The Rick Emerson Show begins shortly. Keep listening. This is the Emerson News Network.
Mix-a-lot. So put me in your CD changer. Watch your girl, cause Mix a rearranger. Ooh, he's sexist, ooh, he's sexist. Keeping Rush Limbaugh restless. I'm the Mackin-ass monster. Straight chase girls through the tail, cause I won't stop. You can call it whack, but you respect this black. When it comes to game, I'm a monster, Mac. But she ain't nasty as me, cause makes a lot of stack on freaky. Can't stop tapping that Tweety, give it to the needy. Nope, cause I'm too damn greedy. Here I go, walking through the mall. Don't play ball, but I got game for them all. Focus on a victim, focus on a victim. Mr. Richard is hot, so let's sick him. And like a tomahawk jumping on a stud. Girl, you got to give me my pub. The pickup king is back, buddy. Trying to give lessons to these fake ass ballers and understudies. But I'm not trying to call you no bitch, girl. Don't give a damn if you're poor or rich, girl. And we can play a little pool. And I'm poking that eight ball cool. And the booties, I still like the booties. She got a little waist doing squats just to keep me on my duty. Giant size gang's what I'm dropping. Straight freaks with them thick old glutes is what I'm knocking. Now the right wing wanna test me. If liking sex is a crime, then you arrest me. But don't tell me who to sing to, Jack. Cause a third of your life is in a sack. I'm a monster, Mac. Till I spot a young cutie straight sucking down a soda pop. Baby girl's winking, mix a lot stinking.
I hope this girl's feet ain't stinking.
Cause I don't like stinking my automobile art. So when you get inside, don't fall. The carpet is clean, so wipe your feet outside and step on in and let's ride. Here we go, swinging by Frank Lloyd's to get a little soul food. Now you got a brother in the mood. Damn, gotta get a home with the quickness. Cause this thickness, boy, you ought to witness. No need to put my girls on tilt. Cause straight up game, I get your milk. The nasty dog is back with straight pimp game black. Ain't no shame, I'm a Monster Mac. Monster Mac, fool. I'm the Monster Mac. Monster Mac with big game, baby.
The Rick Emerson Show begins shortly. Keep listening. This is the Emerson News Network.
Poison kiss.
Emerson Show begins shortly. Keep listening. This is the Emerson News Network.
it drives a Datsun B210. But it keeps that sucker clean and shining like a whistle. At least we can pretend. Ain't nothing changed, ain't nothing wrong. I swear I'd rather die than to ever let up. That everything's changed, everything's wrong right now. Everything's wrong right now. Ain't nothing changed, ain't nothing wrong. I swear I'd rather die than to ever let up. That everything's changed, everything's wrong right now. Everything's wrong.
The Rick Emerson Show begins shortly. Keep listening. This is the Emerson News Network.
Yeah.
The Rick Emerson Show begins shortly. Keep listening. This is the Emerson News Network.
Now I am a man, and I know that there's no time to waste. There's too much to lose.
The Rick Emerson Show begins shortly. Keep listening. This is the Emerson News Network. The following is a production of the Emerson News Network. The following is a production of the Emerson News Network.
Now, as your father probably told you, my name is Matt Foley, and I am a motivational speaker. Now, let's get started by letting me give you a little bit of a scenario of what my life is all about. First off, I am 35 years old, I am divorced, and I live in a van down by the river. Now, you kids are probably saying to yourselves, hey, I'm going to go out and I'm going to get the world by the tail and wrap it around and pull it down and put it in my pocket. Well, I'm here to tell you that you're probably going to find out as you go out there that you're not going to amount to jack squat. You're going to end up eating a steady diet of government cheese and living in a van down by the river. Now, young man, what do you want to do with your life?
Matt, I kind of want to be a writer.
Well, Lottie frickin' duh! We got ourselves a writer here. Hey, Dad, I can't see real good. Is that Bill Shakespeare over there?
Huh? Well, actually, Matt, Ellen and I have encouraged Brian in his writing.
Dad, I wish you could just shut your big yapper!
It's after the hour of one, and this the month of June of the year of our Lord, 2011. Thank you for coming by, making a part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of this, the Emerson News Network, looming high above the milk packing district here in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. Hail to thee, Chris Farley. Here's the thing about Chris Farley. It's not just, it's too easy just to say, well, he's a big fat guy in a little coat. I mean, sure, fat guy, little coat. Always funny. It's not just that he yelled, but although he did have this kind of weird Andy Devine, like scraping the side of a wall sort of a voice, the thing about Chris Farley is he just had, it wasn't even like a lack of shame, it was like he had anti-shame. He just had, it was like whatever the inverse of shame is, he just had no, like there was, would you not say that he had no control with his comedy? It's not to say that it was just sort of done all slapdash, it's just that there was nowhere he would not go to get the joke. That's really the hallmark of genius. By the way, and in his sketch with Phil Hartman there. So there you go. Damn stupid murderous wives. And vomit. Why do they take everything we love, Don? Why? Why, show pony? Why? Why do they always get the good ones? You're just not speaking today.
No, I am. I'm just waiting for something.
You just got to look and smile and shrug. And
which doesn't make for good radio, really, does it?
No offense, you did just like Philo does exactly the same thing. How are you today?
I'm fine.
You know, but he doesn't really say that. He just kind of like, he doesn't really smile. You know, he does it, but he does the thing. He does the dog thing. You know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
Here I am.
You betcha.
That's right, Davey. All right. Well, hello. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We are here looming over Portland like a large looming thing. If you'd like to engage with us today telephonically, it's 503-505. 6964 503-505-6964. You want to email, you can do that as well. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. Although, really, if you need help spelling my name at this point, you're probably not listening. So let's just skip that. Forget I said that. That's dumb. Scooping is stupid. Skip that. You can also email Dawn if you like. It's Dawn, D-A-W-N, @rickemerson.com. Although I will say, I have to say that I am heartened by the speed with which everybody has transitioned over to using ShowPony. Yes. @rickemerson.com. I mean, it was not even really a thing I planned, because, I mean, like, how could you plan that?
No.
You know, like, how is that a thing that you could really anticipate? I mean, did you think, like, what, 2 weeks ago or whatever, or like, last year when I said, so I'm putting together this show, and anyway, I mean, did you think, well, I can't wait for that day in May when I become christened ShowPony?
You know, I've wanted a nickname for a long time. I'm one of those people that my whole life I've never really had a nickname, and I'm not sure that this is the one I would have chosen.
Nobody
for myself.
Ever called you like you know, Dawn's Early Light, Donatella.
Well, I mean, you know, I got that crap like, you take grease out of my way, you know.
That oh, kind of I thing. Haven't even thought about
and
that. Tony, that's beneath me.
Tony Orlando jokes and crap, but no, I never really no. Dawn is not a name that really lends itself to nicknames.
Well, see, but now you've been given. Now it's like a name and a nickname all at once. It's like you've been.
I know.
It's like you've been. It's like when you go to a confirmation, you know, or you're made a nun or something, and suddenly you're no longer like Lucinda. Your name is Altrucius Marie.
And I like it because in my head, ShowPony, it means
it's
I
like
kinda,
a fanfare that accompanies you.
Well, I kind of look like a My Little Pony, you know, like I'm all purple and I have glitter. It just feels sort of magical.
Excellent. Is it sort of a show pony?
A little bit.
All right.
But I'm riding on a rainbow.
That's fantastic. Sort of. Excellent. Anyway, so if you'd like to tell your phone us today, it is 503-505-6964. You know, the thing about that telephone thing is I think my mom actually only said that, like, you know, my mom and my dad have these weird, like, pronunciational if that's even a word, things that they would do. And in retrospect, I'm not really sure how often I actually heard it as contrasted with how many times I heard telephone pronounced correctly. And yet, telephone is the thing that seems to have stuck in my head. There's no explanation for that.
My mother decided that she preferred the British pronunciation aluminium. So she started saying that for a while. And I kept trying to explain to her that, first of all, we don't say it that way here.
Yeah.
And second of all, you're adding an extra letter that isn't in the word.
Yeah, it's actually not even, here in America, it's not even really spelled that way. Also, by the way, lest anybody get up in our grills about this, aluminum is in fact the correct spelling. The British augmented it to match a bunch of the other crap that they'd already discovered because they wanted to have like, because they wanted it to be like a goddamn tea service where everything went together. And so they had like, you know, they had like magnesium and titanium or whatever, and so the fact that there wasn't an IUM at the end of it just drove their sort of like, no offense, just their like tight ass British sensibilities like through the, like they just couldn't tolerate it, and so that is why they actually say aluminium, because they spell it aluminium, because they could not, they just couldn't face another day where all of their like precious metals didn't end in the same sort of linguistic suffix. There you go. The more you know. You know, here's the thing about when they say knowing is half the battle in those G.I. Joe things. They never really explain what the other half of the battle is. I mean, is it,
no.
It can't just, is it just acting, doing? Or is it like 13% is celery, 2% wishful thinking, 1% hate, 5% tying your shoes, 7% galloping over the horizon, 9% sleep.
Now I'm thinking about knowing is half the battle.
Yeah, but that leaves 50%.
Yeah, and then that, yeah, that is very vague. It's like, and the
they
rest,
don't really,
figure the rest out yourself, says
just,
G.I. Joe.
You're just like, you're left to your own devices at that point. It's like, well, knowing is half the battle. You figure out the rest. I mean, I guess it's sort of a, where that's not, they're not giving you a fish, but they're not teaching you to fish. You know, they're kind of spotting you a fish. They're priming the pump, as it were. Yeah. But then they assume that you will be able to piece together the rest on your own. And if you don't, that is your funeral, I guess.
It's like they're giving you an instruction manual.
That's exactly it, Dawn.
Fish.
That's really what it is. They're telling you where the... they're giving you a map, you know, to where the fish and the instructions might be held. Let's quit talking about this now.
Okay.
Anyway, so I still haven't even gotten past the phone number. It's 503-505-6964 or rick@rickemerson.com or don@rickemerson.com. You can also text us via the website if you want. You can go to Skype. We are Rick Emerson Show. That is all one word via Skype. Rick Emerson Show. That is our username. Let's see. What else do we have here? Coming up today, we got Taser Watch coming up today. And so this is not... So I haven't just like fallen... This isn't like yesterday and I'm asleep. Or it's like the end of the Twilight Zone thing and I've really been dead the whole time, or I'm a store mannequin or something. It's just the same watches 2 days in a row. Taser watch, monkey watch.
They're two different, watches. Although the thing is, I'm looking through my stuff now and I'm unsure what I did with the taser watch.
You just made it up, didn't you?
It seems to have just vanished. I have many, many exciting stories, though.
Do you really?
That will thrill and amaze you.
Really?
Yes.
Are you bluffing?
No, I am not.
Okay.
I have some delightful news for you today.
Really?
Yes.
Are you thinking of something specific when you say that?
Well, yes. First of all, pants steak.
Pants steak.
I got a guy who who got arrested after flinging pants steak.
All right. Well, hold that thought for just one moment.
So, I got lots of stuff.
So you can get us via Skype if you want to. It's Rick Emerson Show, all one word there, Rick Emerson Show. Taser watch coming up today. Monkey watch coming up today. Our good friend, Mr. Keelan King, going to be in the studio talking about his new project, Star Pilot's Lament. Star Pilot's Lament, which is a musical sci-fi epic of staggering, of Gaussian proportions, which, by the way, has completely righteous cover art. And that is the thing that really in this... Look, I'm not one to just, just cover myself in sackcloth and ashes about progress or, technology or the way that things advance or, But, I mean, two things. Well, not just two things. But, I mean, there's two things that we really have lost, with moving into the digital age. One of them... We haven't lost cover art, but it's like, you can't... You can't really sit and just stare at your iPhone looking at the cover art of some album because it just, first of all, you look like a douche. And second of all, you're not really going to be, it's just not, it is, I think in point of fact, it is just not the same. But I would say also, qualitatively, I would say it is not quite the same because you are lacking a richness of texture that one got with cover art when it was actually printed on paper. And again, I'm not saying that that everything was sort of better back then, but I mean, I just can't, and maybe this makes me an old guy, maybe it probably does, I just can't imagine just sitting and staring at, even if it was on an iPad or something larger, I can't imagine just sitting there and staring at a record cover on the iPad while listening to something and then not just feeling like a boob. I think I would just feel like a tool doing that. So, anyway. We've kind of lost the glory of the cover art. And so that I feel bad for guys who make cover art for a living. We're like, that's their thing. Because there were guys who were cover art specialists, where that is where they... There's the guy...
Phil Hartman, who we were just speaking of. Phil Hartman himself was a graphic designer before he went into comedy and designed a number of famous album covers.
Like what? Do you know anything offhand?
I can't remember what they were specifically. I could Wikipedia it, but yeah, there were a few that you would recognize.
There's the guy whose name his name is Brian something, and he went by the rather unappetizing moniker of Pusshead. But he did all of Metallica's art. I don't know if he did he may not have actually done the cover art, but he did all of their t-shirts and sort of all their merch stuff. I mean, for years and years and years, and became closely identified with them. There's that Roger Dean guy that did all of the Yes cover art, and I mean that really is
Phil Hartman created over 40 album covers for bands, including Poco and America.
Poco.
And he also designed the logo for Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
Really? Excellent. Now he's dead. Damn you, Bryn Hartman, and vomit. So there's cover art, and then there's also liner notes. That's the thing we've talked about before, where it's like you're just, and everybody who at least is my age or older, I don't know if this still happens now, because it's a Thursday, we're so totally off point already, but... I don't know if it's true what they always say about, kids who are sort of rediscovering vinyl or whatever. Maybe they are. Maybe there's a subset of kids who discover vinyl or who appreciate the fact that it has some tactile sensation. Or maybe there's some sort of an aural warmth to it. But I would say that, however many kids today are finding vinyl and however many people my age and older are sticking with it or rediscovering it, it's still a minority of the population. I mean, it's got to be less than 15% of the people. You just got to figure that probably nobody sits around and just reads through liner notes these days and much less commits them to memory or memorizes a lot of the information contained within them, which I didn't consciously do, but I was unconsciously committing a lot of it to memory growing up, where there are still albums that I can recite, in the liner notes, specific thank yous or weird sort of observations or little in-jokes that the band would put in there, or they would have strange little quotes or just, thing. Just stuff is it was almost like an Easter egg where you'd be reading the liner notes and there would be some strange shout-out or they would put some bizarre, there was... I'm going to stop myself right now because we're just getting... We should wait for Keelan to be here because a lot of these musical discussions we should have later on the program. So I'm getting ahead of myself here. He's going to be in the studio here in just a bit talking about his new record, Star Pilot's Lament. Find out more about it at starpilotslament.com. Let's see, Don Taylor's also tracking the following headlines for you on this Thursday.
A shoplifter steals meat in his pants and then flings it. A fox attacks five people in New Hampshire. And a store clerk sells cigarettes to boys in exchange for spankings.
Excellent. Wait, no. Bad. Mustn't. Somebody says, knowing is half the battle. If you don't know the other half, you've already lost the battle, so it doesn't matter. You're freaking me out, man. All right, so there you go. So that's all coming up today. Taser Watch, Monkey Watch, Keelan King in the studio, and all of those things that Don just mentioned will be getting, including pant steak and spankings in exchange for... What were the spankings in exchange for?
Cigarettes.
Smokes?
Yes.
All right, smokes for smacks?
Smokes for spankings.
Just came up with that right there. Smokes, smacks. That's what I do. That's right. That is in case you say to yourself, 32 cents. For what? For that.
You are right a professional there. Wordsmith.
That's right. Bam. Bringing it is what I do, Don. Like nobody's... There you go. That's the sound of me bringing it right there.
It scared me.
That's an R. Well, that's how much I bring it. That is, it can be off-putting. It can be terrifying. Oh, no. Rick Emerson is bringing it. Hide yourselves. Oh, God.
And the donkey cries and the children scream.
I try not to unnerve people, but it's difficult sometimes. I can't go in with one fist behind my back. All right. Let's see. Hey, Don's going to talk about cat poop here in a second. I swear to God. Not kidding. A couple things before that. Somebody says, gas panties. Weren't those on the prisoner? This has got to be from yesterday. I think we were talking about something yesterday with panties that you ripped off and then they gassed the assailant. That sounds like a thing I was talking about.
Yeah.
Whatever. I said we were talking about
rape, anti-rape devices.
I think that was from yesterday. Yeah. Have you considered getting a dog psychiatrist for Philo and his many neuroses?
You were talking about putting him on Prozac or something.
I was talking about the fact that it had been suggested by our vet. And to be fair, the vet wasn't pushing it. The vet wasn't saying, you got to do it. Not like with your damn kids, where you just hit them up with a trank gun before they leave the house now. He was just saying, this is a thing some people do, which I am wholeheartedly opposed to that. Lara sort of has toyed with it because she feels bad that he's just so twitchy all the time and he just seems so terrified of everything. What I said is that I would almost consider putting him on... I hate this term. It's so dumb. They call them doggy downers, but it's like a Valium. I would almost consider a Valium or a Xanax or whatever occasionally, if he's going to be traveling.
Yeah.
Goddamn, she drove, and it wasn't even flying. God forbid, you put that dog in a plane and he would just explode. I can't even... She drove with him, and it was just her and him, and he loves her. That's the thing. I don't want to go on and on about my dog. But, but Philo, he's a very loving dog because he's terrified of everything, and so he, clings to us. But he really is a mama's boy. He literally hides behind my wife's skirt, a lot. If there's any sort of noise or anything, he will go and just immediately hide behind her, peer out from behind her as though she's just like the shield protecting him from the world, which I guess she is. But she drove to Provo, and it was just him and her and she rented a truck, but it was just him and her in this truck driving to Provo, and she said that the entire time he just sat in the passenger, seat or on the floor or whatever, and just went, and just stared, out the window, and was just so totally just sitting there like a mogwai, just sort of, late at night, It's all very...
I've toyed
with the idea of, giving him, giving him, an anti-anxiety thing or whatever. I don't want to give him the doggy, the Prozac, though, because it seems like that's a thing that... And that doesn't just calm you down. That actually, rewires the way your brain is working. And if you give that to a person and it makes them all wonky in the head, they can kind of tell you.
Yeah.
But it's how would we know if it's just making it worse for him? He can't really... Well, he seems nervous. There's nothing he could do to indicate that it's making him feel worse that he doesn't already do now. So no, the answer is... And the dog psychiatrists are retarded. Don't suggest that. Let's see. What else?
Psychiatrists, but there are dog trainers who specialize in behavioral sort of therapy.
Well, there's that.
For nervous dogs.
But that's not the same as, where they're waving their hands over him and going, I'm sensing...
Well, if anyone calls themselves
his aura
a dog psychiatrist, I
yeah, we've talked about taking him to a here's the thing. Hold on a second. Give me a little bit. Somebody else in this room makes doggy downers. All right. I guess we've already done all our sort of business here at the top of the show, so this is where we can get off point, right?
We can
get distracted here.
Yes.
All right. So we'll talk about...
And it's our show. We can do anything we want.
That's right, you sons of bitches. Suck that. Yeah. So we'll talk about cat poop here in a second, and then we'll do the obligatory... Here's the reason I'm gonna mention the Blake Lively thing. It's not just to irritate people. That's a pleasant side effect. It's so I can read this email from our good friend Aaron, in the OC, who in turn emailed me about the Blake Lively thing this morning. I'll just read it, actually, and then I'll get to the actual story later. But he says,
Dude, G-O-O-D, dude, more Blake pics have leaked. And then he followed that up like with the link. And then he followed it up like 4 seconds later with this email. Like he sent that, but then his email immediately after that, he says, oh, and to anyone who complains about you talking about Nikki Blakey, which is creepy. He says, anyone who complains about you talking about Nikki Blakey can take their $7 and give it to NPR or go listen to Lars. We don't need that kind of element in our audience, Rick. And then he signs it, all caps, Jesus has decreed it. Wow. And then presumably vanishes in like a puff of smoke.
Wow.
So that's awesome. So we'll talk a little bit about those. But again, wait till Keelan's in the studio for that. He'll have observations to make about breasts. So that, and then we'll talk about the cat thing here in a second. But what was I saying? Dog, blah, da, da, ba, ba. So we've talked about taking him to like a behavioral, you know, like a training place, just to teach him to like, just to like sit still and to not be terrified. Because the whole thing about him being terrified is that's just going to be one of those things that gets him killed one of these days. Like, we already know how Max will die. Max will die fighting a polar bear because, or like a mountain lion. Because we've had this discussion about, like, because we're dorks, we've had the discussion about, like, during the zombie apocalypse, which dog would last longer. And we have already decided that, you know, Philo would last longer because he just hides from everything. I mean, it doesn't matter. Leaves. He ran away from a leaf that was falling off a tree the other day. So it's like he would just hide. Whereas Max has just such an overdeveloped sense of imperviousness and strength. Like, he has no notion that he is mortal. And so, if Max were, like, loose in the woods, like, if you have Bella, like, how long, realistically, how long would Bella last if you just let her loose in the wilderness? Would she, because some dogs could, like, adapt, and you figure they could go wild or feral and make
She's surprisingly resilient. I've seen her react to other dogs that act, like, towards her with hostility and actually kind of get her back up. And, you know, because she is part pit bull and part shepherd or pointer or whatever.
So she could find food and sort of make her own way.
I think she could probably handle herself.
And she's a larger dog, so she'd be able to sort of, you know, relatively speaking, I mean, predators would be able, she'd be able to carry her own.
Yeah.
Or hold her own or whatever you say. Where, as opposed to Max, who again is just like a tiny, I mean, you can, if you really want to see pictures of our dogs, which you probably don't, they're at rickemerson.com/pictures in the album just delightfully titled Our Pets.
And there's one on my Facebook page from last night, actually, that because my dog was just laying shamelessly on her back next to the couch going, rub my belly to Patrick. And so I took a picture of her.
Oh, my God, I got to Facebook that.
Yeah.
So if you go, you can see pictures of Bella and also your cat, Mrs. Pretty Paws or whatever her name is. What is her name?
Nemo,
sorry. But, you know, the thing about Philo is that, like, Philo and Max, first of all, Max is just this tiny little Kleenex ball dog. He's just this little puffball. I mean, he looks like one of those pocket dogs that, like, some skag in Hollywood is carrying around, sticking out of her purse, and she's going through a drive-thru at In-N-Out. But he has no sense of that. Like, neither of them have a sense of relative sizes. And so the first time that Max was let loose in the wilderness, like, he would see something that belonged to, like, a bear. And he would just go up and just take it, like, this is mine now. Or he would be eating something, and a bear would wander up and be like, give that to me. And Max would be like, get bent, bear. I am Max. And he would, you know, and probably try to seize, and the bear would just cream him. I mean, he would be into tiny little Max pieces, like, instantly. So I'm not saying that I won't be sad someday when Max goes to run at the Rainbow Bridge. But I'm saying he's going to die as he lived, just with an overdeveloped sense of ego and believing he owns the entire world. And he will probably, here's the thing, Max will probably go down like fighting a pack of hyenas or something, because he'll just be like, you know, he'll be telling them to get off his property, which of course is everything. Philo, Philo will just sit and just, you know, nervous himself into such a pile of whatever. My thing about taking him to, and I do have a point here, because I'm going to ask you a question about dog training, and I actually had written this down, but I'm glad you mentioned it, because I would have forgotten it. The thing about Philo is, like, he's so terrified that his whole thing is, I know one of these days he's going to be startled by, like, the sound of, like, me stepping on a twig, and he's going to bolt, like, into the street. Like, the first time I took him to get a haircut, I took him out onto the sidewalk, and I bumped into something. I like, bumped into a mailbox or something, and I made, like, a loud bong noise. And he bolted so hard and so fast that he actually snapped his collar open and ran onto hawthorn.
Oh, Jesus.
And I mean, oh, no, and trust me, that's, like, a thing that, like, That just, like, stays with me, like, forever. And actually, a woman who I never got the chance to thank actually literally jumped in the middle of the street and, like, waved her arms to stop traffic. And I, you know, so I, like, owe her everything for that. But he just completely bolted, and his collar broke. It just snapped. So that's why I've been thinking about trying to get him trained, just, like, for his own sake, so he doesn't just, you know, like, take off, like, into the... you know, just take off into the undergrowth at some point. But the other thing, because he's so freaked out by everything, he barks. And we have just, man, it's like we have tried every single training method. We have tried everything we could possibly think of. And so, like, our next step is like one of those, like, it's like the, it's not like the shock collar, but it's like the collar that does like the vibration. So it's like if he barks more than 3 times in 10 seconds, it goes like, zzz, and it doesn't, you know, it doesn't jolt, but it vibrates. And the thing is, hopefully with him, he's like just such a pansy that might actually work, because he's so afraid of like babies and leaves and ice cubes and everything that might actually. So I ordered that should be here in the mail the next day or two. I'll be curious to see if that actually. Do you have any experience with those anti-barking collars?
No, I've never used those.
Because I just, you know, here's the thing that we don't want to be like those people that have that dog. And
yeah.
Right now we are. We hate those people with that dog. It's like when you go to somebody's house and the dog jumps up on you and they go, he's just introducing, he's just playing. And you're like, well, get him to play somewhere else. You know, people who don't make their kids obey in restaurants. We don't want to be the people with the dog that's just a big pain.
No.
And right now, when we take him out like at 11 o'clock at night for a walk quickly, if he just sees like a shadow or like anything, he just starts barking, and I just can't have that. So the anti-bark collar is en route to our house right now. So I will let you know how that works. Because okay. They have the citronella one too. Which where it sprays like a mist of citronella, which I guess they don't like the smell of. But then it's like punishing all of us, like Max and everybody. Like every time Philo barks, like all of us have to suck down a bunch of citronella spray.
Maybe the peer pressure would work. Maybe just Max's disdain for him smelling like citronella time would help make him bark less too.
I don't know.
I'm sorry, I'm ashamed.
But so yeah, so we get the vibration. And also, here's the thing, it's a dual action thing. It vibrates and then it puts out that so-called high-pitched noise that only dogs can hear, which I think is a scam. I don't think that actually exists. I don't think there is a high-pitched noise only dogs can hear. I think that's probably made up.
Well, we talked about this about a year or so ago, and you talked about, you'd asked me what I thought about you taking Philo places to try and get him used to stuff.
Yeah.
And I suggested that, you know, yeah, you could probably ease him into that. You start by taking him, you know, you find a park where there's, like, almost nobody there, and then you take him gradually get him around places where
doing.
There's other people, and he might eventually, you know, start to relax
just,
a bit.
The progress is just so minute and incremental, though. I mean, it's been like a year and a half we've been taking him to this dog park, and it's like, I mean, the progress is so slight as to almost be non-existent. I mean, it really, so I got to do something, because I just, as much of a coward as he is, I can't have a dog just like waking up the neighborhood, because it's like, everybody hates that guy. Somebody says, Rainbow Bridge, WTF, is your dog a goddamn Viking? Yes, he is, sir. This is not a pet owner, obviously. Don, you know about the Rainbow Bridge, don't you?
I do. In fact, when I saw the movie Thor, we were sitting there watching Thor, and there's, you know, they're in Asgard, so there's the Rainbow Bridge. And I didn't even actually make the initial connection that it was Asgard. I just saw that it was all glittery and rainbow-colored, and I leaned over to Patrick and I go, so is that the bridge that all the dogs go across when they die? And when Pat's going, shut up.
So when you, and I don't know if this is like a worldwide thing or whatever, but maybe just, it might just be, might be a thing in these United States. But I got to tell you, it's happened with every animal that I've taken to the vet to meet its maker. Where, you know, it's like I go to the Powell Boulevard Vet Clinic, and after you have an animal put to sleep, they would always send you, just these cards. You get like a sympathy card like a couple days later, and it's always about how like your animal is running and jumping free at the Rainbow Bridge with other animals and living the high life basically, but the Rainbow Bridge I guess is like dead town, so that's like that's like where grandma goes to live with angels. It's like your dog goes to, or my hedgehogs, they go to the Rainbow Bridge, where presumably they just sit and go and don't move because they're terrified of everything. So you know. Anyway, so that's the Rainbow Bridge.
That's
is that
Rainbow
also
Bridge.
A thing?
Philo will be strong and brave.
Sure,
finally,
sure he will. Unless the Rainbow Bridge is like some sort of like wizard behind the curtain who also gives him like a brain and a heart. Because the thing is, he needs like all of the stuff from the wizard, like everything the wizard, like courage and everything. He needs all of it. Is the Rainbow Bridge? That's not where Vikings go. That's Valhalla.
Right.
Okay. What movie was it where they went to the Rainbow Bridge?
Well, in Thor, they were in Asgard. And, and there's a rainbow bridge that goes...
Is that where Thor's puppy goes?
Well, between the world of the gods, which is Asgard, and the world of men, there is a rainbow bridge between the two.
Well, Asgard, well, then what the hell is Valhalla?
It's a different...
It's a thing.
One is, like, Vikings, and one is the Swedes or the Norse or something. I don't know.
All right. Anyway, all right. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Hey, since we're just talking about pets anyway, do you want to talk about cat poop, Don?
Well, yes. As I have mentioned before, we've talked, you and I particularly, how you and I are kind of troubled sleepers.
Yes.
We have trouble getting to sleep and, you know, we wake up during the night. And Patrick is about as close to being narcoleptic as a person could be without just dropping off.
Does he just switch off?
Yeah. Yeah. I have actually done, I've actually tested it, just doing the 1,000, 2, 1,000, 3, to see how many seconds it would be between him saying good night and then doing the deep breathing that shows he's asleep.
Being asleep.
And I've clocked him at 15 seconds.
Wow. That's impressive.
He said good night and then 1,000, 2, and he's gone. You know, and so last night at some point he was snoring and I went roll over and he didn't. I was like roll over and I had to actually say his name and shove him 5 times to get him to roll over on his side so he would stop snoring. So about 1:30 in the morning, I'd been asleep I think probably about an hour. I finally got to sleep because I was having one of those nights where I was like, oh, shut up brain, shut up brain, and finally got to sleep and then heard this weird noise, wake up the cat. We have this, we have one of those carpeted, like, cat tree things.
Right.
That cats can jump on and lay on and sharpen their claws on. And it's, the top of it is even with the window. So the cat, I put it by the window so the cat can sit on the top of the window and look out the window. And she was on top of that at, like, 1:30 in the morning, just attacking it like crazy with her claws.
For what reason?
Because she's a cat. Because there's a couple of different things that cats, particularly cats that live in apartments, will do when they're feeling particularly energetic. One is just run back and forth like crazy from room to room to room. But I had the bedroom door closed, so she couldn't do that. So I guess she was feeling particularly energetic at 1:30 in the morning. And I'm like, stop it. Shh. Stop it. Just knock it off. Like, God, why are you doing that? I closed my eyes, and another moment or two went by, and then I got, like, smacked in the face with the smell of cat poop. So
that's the worst thing
like,
I've ever heard.
Oh, God. Because, you know, so I realized the cat...
Not actually smacked in the face with cat poop, but it just sounds similar
to that. The wave of smell of cat poop. Because that's another thing about cats, is that sometimes cats, even though cats eat exactly the same thing every day, like, bowl of dry food, bowl of water, that's all you get all day long, nothing else. And yet sometimes... The poop will be so sweat. Sometimes it's like they do it willfully.
It's like they've just got some sort of olfactory generation,
yeah,
or like a smell, like a scent generation thing in their stomach.
Yes, I really want this one to be particularly smelly. And so I get up. So that happens, and I get up, and I go to the bathroom. Then I realize it smells so bad, I'm concerned that maybe she was like trying to make some kind of point about something, and maybe it was on the floor. And I didn't want to step in it because I've done that, and that's not something you want to do at 1:30 in the morning.
No, and then that's just stepping in, and I mean stepping in any business in the middle of the night, even if it's just like, even if it's not poo, even if it's just like, you know, whatever.
It's like always something like a cold hairball or a God only knows what.
It ruins your whole night.
Yeah.
I mean, it really does.
So I go in and I open the bathroom, I turn on the bathroom light, and I kind of half close the door so I don't bother Patrick. And I look around, and there's no cat poop where it shouldn't be. So I close the bathroom door, and I'm like, now I'm trapped in the bathroom with it. And there it is in the cat box, and it's just hideous. It's like just this nightmare pile of poop. So I grab some toilet paper, and I clean it up. I throw it down the toilet.
Ugh.
I flush it. I spray everything. I open the bathroom door, turn off the light, spray in the bedroom, get into bed. This morning, I get up. And then that explains why the cat was doing the thing on the cat thing.
Right.
And I have to admit, I kind of almost admired it. Because given her relative size, she's a very small cat. Honestly, if I had pooped something that impressive, I might want to do a victory lap around the apartment, too.
Pooping a radiator.
You know, because it was impressive. So, and this morning we get up and I'm like, oh, God, I'm sorry about that cat poop thing. And Pat goes, what cat poop thing? I said at 1:30 with the smell and the light and the bathroom. He's like,
just oblivious.
No. No, nothing. Unaware that any of it happened.
By the way, this explains so much. This is like a microcosm of your whole relationship, as I see it from my vantage point anyway. The I don't pretend to know everything about your relationship, but the facets that are visible to me from just my seat over here, this explains so much. This really is like writ small. Like you're just sometimes like apoplectic frustration with him because he just seems so like nonplussed by everything. Like he's just, not that he actually doesn't care, it's just that like, he's just not phased. And I think it's because things just sort of roll off him. But I think that that probably is a self-perpetuating syndrome, because you will eventually just take care of whatever it is.
Yes.
Like, he doesn't have to, like, you know, he just gives them your phone number when he's trying to get a new apartment, because they'll just call you and you'll figure it out. He's at the hospital, he'll let them call you about the bill. He doesn't have to be alert for the smell of cat, you know, business, because, like, he knows that you'll get up and take care of it. And in the morning, he'll be none the wiser. Yeah. He'll have slept all the way through the night.
In fact, he was talking on the way to work today about how good he feels because he got such a great night's sleep last night.
Wow.
I was like, well, of course you did.
No, that's the entire thing, where it's like, he doesn't even, like, it, not only was he admiring the way, you know, not admiring the way that you solved the problem, he didn't know the problem ever existed.
No.
If you hadn't told him, he would never have known the problem occurred. You were just there. You were just silently following behind him like some sort of robot butler. Just immediately. Just taking care of, you know, just dotting his I's and crossing his T's and lacing his shoes all the way through his life.
A little bit.
Pinning notes to his sleeve. Oh, wow. That's awesome. Hey, by the way, just FYI, a little breaking news here, and then we'll take a break. We'll come back with Mr. Keelan King. He's going to be in the studio with us. Let's see if I can get this here. Sony has been hacked again. A hacker group has claimed it engineered yet another attack on Sony Corp computer networks. The group, which calls itself Lulz Security.
That's the same people, though, isn't it?
Well, I don't think so. The other group was the Lulz Boat.
Yeah, but they were Lulzsec.
But
Lulz,
I don't think
Sec, also known as the Lulz Boat.
Yeah, but who knows? I mean, I could call myself Lulz Security.
Yeah,
I mean, it's
sure.
Said Thursday it broke into servers that run the SonyPictures.com website and compromised the personal information of, wait for it, more than 1 million Sony customers.
Oh, God.
I shouldn't laugh. I'm so glad. Never have I been so glad I don't have stock in a company. All right. Well, there you go. So that sucks. I mean, for them. All right. Jesus. It's the biggest break-in in internet history. All right. Well done, Sony. Or not.
Lulzsec.
God damn. All right. Well, let's see. We'll do this. We'll come back after the break. We'll welcome Mr. Keelan King into the studio. We'll talk about his new work, Star Pilots Lament. Later on, Taser Watch, Monkey Watch, and all that. Stay there. It is the Rick Emerson radio program. We are back after this. Go nowhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Inside.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network. Listening to the Emerson News Network.
Rick Emerson Radio Program. Why, hello there. It is 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964. And I just completely stepped on my own. I'm such an idiot. I had this whole thing that I was going to do here that then didn't get done. I hate me. All right, let's all just pretend. I'm not even going to claim that I'm going to fix this in post. So I was going to come back with Radio Gangster, which is a thing that will trigger some memories for any number of people in the audience. And then I didn't, because then I was busy looking for this other thing, and then none of it happened. All right, let's just... such a moron. I'll get to this here in just a second. Let's.
You okay over there?
No, I'm not. I got like 75. Well, part of it is the printer. And again, I don't normally print a lot of stuff in here. But occasionally, like, I've got something that's going to be, you know, up here. It's going to be like a top five, or it's going to be a news story or whatever. And so now I've got that thing where I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 windows open, on this, all of which have to be readable on the same screen, which is only like 13 inches, you know. So it's not like it's real real easy to find stuff like immediately over here.
You know, I was having that problem yesterday, and you said you didn't care.
No, I don't expect you to care about me now, Don. Why should today be any different than any other day? I don't want your facade of concern. I don't want your...
No, here's the difference. I actually do care.
That's a lie.
I care about you.
I don't want your Potemkin sympathy. You are listening to the...
Nobody cares.
Rick Emerson radio program. You can email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. Don, D-A-W-N, @rickemerson.com. Let's see if I can just do some sort of a clever segue here. You all know our next guest. He's been a fixture on the Rick Emerson radio program for nearly a decade, contributing... This is not at all written out, by the way. This isn't at all scripted and written on a thing on the screen here that I had to find.
Too bad you couldn't print that.
As sort of a dry run for the Outlook Portland taping we're going to do at some point. Contributing music, performing live, and, yes, sharing his own brand of embittered rakish wit with the people. His past albums include Headphone Hemoglobin and, as part of Azure Noir, Addicted to Blue. His new project, Star Pilot's Lament, a musical sci-fi epic, will be released June 7th with a listening party happening on June 4th. You can find out more about it at starpilotslament.com. Mr. Keelan King joining us now at the studio. Hello, sir.
Hello.
You haven't... So we were just talking about this during the break before I came back and made such a mess of things. You have not been... You've been in the studio with Greg and Sarah, but you haven't been on this version of the show.
That's right.
With us, so...
Correct.
So what was the year... Well, I don't even... It's all just such a haze of whatever in my head now. What was the year and the mechanism by which you first started interacting with the show? Like, was it the thing where, like, you emailed and then you sent in the Radio Gangster song, or was it you sent that in first and then, like, well, who is this from? And then I don't even remember.
It's a little vague because I was very, very busy hating my life at that time. But
it's good to see things have changed.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I believe that I would email periodically, but I really don't recall. I do remember the whole ordeal of me sitting there and thinking up the song and recording it and sending it in. And I don't remember if I emailed much before that. I don't remember.
And then at one point we had, and then you came into the studio and you did it in the studio.
Yes.
And then there was a firing or two that happened after that. And then we skipped forward to, this will all make sense here in a second. And then we skipped forward to working for CBS. And Radio Gangster had been the song that we had opened the show with for the longest time. And we were at Fisher and then Entercom. And then we went over to CBS. And I think the day we went on the air, you actually sent us the song. You're like, hey, congratulations on, you know, the new version of the show. And here's a little song to open the show with. And then you neglected to tell us that actually, like, the first stanza contains it just said F Entercom. And I don't think it was actually bleeped or clean. And I don't remember if we discovered that live on the air and I actually had to dump it, or if I discovered it moments before the show and was, like, hurrying to bleep it.
I don't remember. I think, you know what? I think it was moments before the show. But it was like, I tend to feel like a lot of fans every time a new version of the show is forced into creation. So I'm like, screw this. I'm sick of this guy.
I'm sick of this happening.
So, yeah, it was just one of those things where, you know what, this is probably the only time I'm going to be able to get this out of my system. So
we did play it for the longest time. We just bleeped the part. We just bleeped the F word in the beginning. And I'll find that so we can play it here again as we go into the next break. But for those who maybe don't know what we're talking about, or if you are a recent convert to the Rick Emerson radio program, so in like 2001, maybe 2002, whenever it was that this song first appeared in our inbox at what was then Hot Talk 1080 KOTK. Radio. Wow, I haven't heard this forever. Wow,
oh,
I'm old.
Radio. I almost get goosebumps remembering how awful this is. I feel like it's awful right now. Like, it's been great. I have a lot of people that come up to me and love it. But looking back on it, it's been 10 years. I just want to crawl under something every time I hear it.
Time for Rick Emerson. It must be new. How did 21 hours tick away so soon? Turned off the TV, hands off my radio, damn it. I gotta hear Rick's thesis on what's wrong with the planet. I'm stuck on I-5 and better get used to chilling, cause it's all backed up. I got the traffic from Sarah Dillon. I'm mad about the traffic, and just because of that, I'ma call up the show and sponsor an F-Mat.
Wow.
Clyde Lewis is the man, and don't forget that. I don't know what he does, but his name sounds fat. Jolie from the front desk is unstoppable. Find out how chicks think, yo, that's impossible. I better come up with a gig like a threesome I never did. Then Rick will get my song and play it for all the kids. But if not, you never know that this record was ever made. He's the radio gangster, and he's got to get paid. Cause he's the radio gangster.
What was the...
Yes, please kill me now.
What was the threesome I never did? Was that in reference to Matt?
No. That was a listener who had either emailed or called about some story about having done a threesome. And when we were, and I remember when pressed for details, he kept coming up short with what exactly happened.
Tell us about the threesome, and he was not really able to provide any sort of any clarifying details.
After that, no one believed anything he had to say.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on hearing this 10 years later?
Yeah, well, you know, I'd like to go back and undo some things. Anybody finished with that time machine yet?
So I'll see if I can dig it up before we go into the next break. But then, yeah. So then the follow up was the Emerson Radio X or Radio Emerson X or something.
I think in between that there was the one where I used that horrible alarm clock sound to make.
Oh
to
God!
Make
the yeah, there's, and there's the snoring.
Yeah,
you
yeah,
have the
yeah.
snoring at the beginning, and that must have been when we were at Intercom. And these are all. So we were. This is why I was just so out of sorts when we came back, because I was trying to track down all of these songs just now, like in the 5 minutes that we were in break there, and I realized that all of the stuff on my hard drive, they all have these weird file names that either seemed to make sense at the time or that we had to use because of this bizarre audio vault system that we had at CBS and at Intercom before that. And so I was trying to find stuff like by using keywords and partial file names, and it's like just using like Emerson or Rick or whatever as a search term on my computer is pointless. So I will...
Dawn, you gotta love how the fact that he has to find files on his computer with his own name on them.
Well,
he can't do so because there are so many of them.
Yes.
Well, it's like being on Facebook. It's just I'm awash in me all the time.
That's awesome.
So here's what's coming up later on the day. We get the Taser Watch coming up, Monkey Watch coming up, and the top five. So this is, and I didn't know if we were going to be doing a musical top five or whatever, because I was actually right at the beginning of the show. I sent you a text. I'm like, oh my God, I totally meant to have you bring in the top five. You know, when you're like, no, I'll put something together. And this is actually going to be the top five star pilots. As we get the top five star pilots in the estimation of Mr. Keelan King. So tell us about Star Pilots Lament, which, again, people can find out more about at starpilotslament.com.
Well, basically what it boils down to is Star Pilots Lament is a musical sci-fi epic, if you will.
In a manner of speaking.
Yes, more or less. It follows the trials and tribulations of one star pilot played by me. And... musically, I guess I would describe it as a mix between electronic music, R&B, and maybe with some hip-hop undertones, because I don't do a lot of rapping on this album, which is what more or less everyone knows me for. So for everyone who knows me for rapping, this is actually the one time you'll hear me singing on an album. So.
Well, on the Azure Noir stuff. I mean, you do some. I mean,
I do a lot of background vocals. Nothing real heavy. I tended to let Morgan handle most of that, but after her subsequent move to Germany and
I wondered about that
and her current pregnancy.
Oh,
yeah, that project's been put on hold.
So this is Azure Noir. If anybody hasn't heard this, and I imagine it's still online at azurenoir.com.
Yes,
which
yes.
AZURENOIR.com, which is not dissimilar from some of the stuff on Star Pilots Lament. It's sort of a down tempo electronica,
yeah.
kind of a thing. And this is actually, people will recognize this. This is one of the beds that we've been playing. This is an instrumental version of a song called Plasma Shells, which is, I don't even know if people do singles or if they do lead off tracks or anything now. But
I did do a single. I didn't want to get into that thing because I hate it. When I get on iTunes, I'm dying for my favorite artist to come out with something new, and he drops a single, and then it's like 6 months before the album.
Right.
That irritates the hell out of me. So I did put Plasma Shells up as a single about a month ago, just just to, you know, get something out there and give people the heads up that something was coming. But then on Tuesday, I'm just going to go ahead and release the full album.
So the full album comes out Tuesday, June 7th, and there's going to be a listening party happening this weekend, which is going to be happening Saturday at...
The Space Room.
I've been saying the Space Room. I realized after a few days of saying that, I didn't know if that was like public knowledge or something.
I've been attempting to spread the word. Where else am I going to have a listening party for Star Pilots Lament?
Seriously. And so you can find out more about that again by going to starpilotslament.com. So what was the inspiration for? Because the way that I described it to Don was that you simultaneously created and then immediately owned and became the preeminent artist within a genre.
That is awesome.
It really is. I was trying to explain, because Laura, she asked me that, like, well, what does it sound like? And I was trying to explain that it doesn't really sound like anything you've probably ever heard before, that it was just this merging of all of these different styles, but then it was a concept record, but then it was about this, you know, but then it was a Star Pilot. It was like being flung from one end of the galaxy to the other, and then ends up joining the crew of this woman, and then going off to obtains the booty or whatever the line
exactly.
is, and it really is just it's just fantastic. I remember when you first sent me the link to it, I was actually driving along in the car listening to it, and realizing that I had not. I mean, it's so hard. I'm not just trying to wax your cars, as they say. It is so hard to do something that has not been done before, something that is not just recycled bits of crap that's existed in the past, and to hear something that is a different take. And so this really is. So was there something that inspired it?
Well, first, what I'll say to what you just said is that it is very difficult to describe it, because people who are interested always want to know, okay, well, what's it like? And for me, it's like, well, you usually will use other albums or artists that already exist to kind of say, well, if you like this, it's kind of along that. And I don't really have that, because I don't do a really good job of mimicking other artists. I just kind of sit down and whatever I can come up with, that's how I proceed. Really, I've always been kind of a geek, so I fit right in with the geek crowd, the sci-fi crowd. And one of the things that I noticed about sci-fi films is that, 90% of the music in sci-fi films is either orchestral, John Williams style,
right.
Or it's, I don't even know how to describe the genre, but it's kind of a rock. I don't know if it's...
A lot of times sci-fi
alternative
stuff...
I'm not sure how to describe the kind of... rock pop music that you hear in sci-fi, anything that's not orchestral.
Well, a lot of stuff, you know, now it either sounds like it'll be like Crystal Method style stuff, where mm-hmm. it's like this weird electronic rock, you know, like big beat style stuff, where it is like Chemical Brothers stuff, or you'll hear a lot, or you just hear whatever the record company's trying to push, you know.
And that's what I was getting, and the thing for me was that I'm so big into sci-fi. And really, when I sat down to write a lot of my newer music, it was like, well, what the heck am I going to write about? Like, I really don't feel like writing an album full of songs about love. Like, it's just not my
thing. It's hard to imagine.
Yeah, well, so, you know, I just felt like, you know what? This is what I love. This is the music that I make. And for right now, the style of music that I make and that I like to listen to, sci-fi isn't even a thought for those people.
Well, and I do have to say that the album actually, and it's... you really do kind of make a statement early on in the record, because the first cut is called Launch, which is just sort of it's like a setup. It's just sort of it's like an overture.
Right.
But the first song proper is called Leave, which actually sets the tone for the whole album, because it's and really it does sound very much like a thing that you would make. I mean, when I was listening to it, it is like you to a T, because it really is about a guy who just wants to get away from people. And just wants to seek, you know, solitude and isolation, and where better to do that than in space? And it really is like epic in every sense of the word. I mean, it just has this grand scale and sweep to it that you just don't hear it. And not even just like in electronic music or in hip hop or rock or whatever. You just don't hear it, period, because so many people are focused, and I understand why, it's because of iTunes, but so many people are focused on a singles-based culture and a singles-based music industry, which is fine. I got no problem. A lot of the music I love, you know, those things are singles. They're things that don't, not everything has to be, have to have a cohesive theme to it. But this really does, from beginning to the end. And it is obvious, it's a whole work, which is great.
So how did the creative process go when you made this? I mean, did you have a story and then start writing music to the story, or did the story sort of develop organically as you were working on the music?
Well, what happened was I wrote leave about a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago. And oddly enough, you'd be surprised at how many people think that's about suicide, which, if you know me.
I always just figured it was your loathing of humanity.
Well, it's mixed in there, yes.
Excellent.
Yes,
right.
But it has nothing to do with suicide. It really fell along the lines of science fiction and wanting to get away and do something that we as humans don't get to do, which is leave this planet and go somewhere else to see something that you can't see. And once I was able to do that, I sat with the song for a long time and went, well, what the hell am I going to do with this? You know, nobody's written anything like this. Everybody thinks it's about suicide. How the hell am I going to turn this into something?
So do you write, do you write on a regular basis or regular schedule, or do you wait for inspiration to?
It, especially for this album, it came in waves. Like, I was able to knock out Leave, and then I sat on it for a long time, and then I was writing some music for other things, and sometimes I'll write music for stuff and go, well, that's not really going to work anyway. Or I'll write music for this and go, you know what, I got a better idea. Right. So I came up with Plasma Shells was probably the next song that I came up with. And after thinking about Leave for a while, I thought, you know what, I like this song. It has a sci-fi feel to it. What's going to sound good with this? And If You Take Two Plasma Shells With You came to mind. And I said, hey, perfect. So once I wrote Plasma Shells, that really set the ball rolling, where I figured, you know what? I can turn this into a sci-fi project because this is stuff that I love. And I'm already, you know, I've already got two songs in the can. What am I going to do with the rest of the album? And so the first thing that came to mind was, well, it doesn't make sense to just have this random song about plasma shells. It doesn't make sense to have this random song about leaving the planet. Why don't I turn it into something where, you know, someone's going to want to know why I'm leaving the planet. Someone's going to know why I'm firing two plasma shells at somebody. So it just turned into a process where after that I said, you know what, I think I'm going to turn this into a project. And then after, I think, the second or third song, I think, which was like Two Guns. And if you hear the album, you'll start to get all of this. But Two Guns is essentially you are kind of in a, I guess you'd say, Mos Eisley of sorts, and you get drugged while drinking.
See, okay,
that and was, then your ship gets stolen.
And that was this is what I was talking to Laura about. I'm like, and then he said, and I don't think I referenced Mos Eisley because I think it would have been Lost Ark. But I said, I described it as being sort of like in Raiders of the Lost Ark. I'm like, well, he's like drinking, and there's like a Karen Allen type there, and then he gets drugged, and then he wakes up, and he's in the hold of this spaceship, and then he's sort of been drafted into service by, you know, like a hot space babe that he's, you know, got to. Then of course he has to sex at some point because it's what a star pilot does.
What happens?
How long did the actual production take once you actually said, like, this is, like, I'm going to make this, it's going to be, you know, the concept record, I guess, when you said, this is what I'm going to do, this is the story, I'm going to put it all together, how long until you were done?
That took about a year, because it was probably early last summer when I really got comfortable with the idea that this is what I was going to do, and I got to a point where I had maybe half the album written by the end of the year. By then, I was kind of prepping for my relocation from Vegas to Portland. So that kind of occupies your brain. You get busy with all that stuff, and you lose a little bit of inspiration. But once I got back here, and I got here, and I got situated and sat around for a little bit, and I knew, you know, I needed to get this finished, it was, again, bang, bang, bang. I got like three songs that I was able to just crank out right away. It comes in waves where I can sit there and crank them out, and then I'll go 3-4 months where I don't have anything.
And then what is your writing? Do you start with lyrics, or do you start with music, or do you just does it vary from song to song how you?
I usually start. I usually write music. I usually don't have a real formula for music. I'll usually just start with the sound. I'll get something going on the keyboard. I'll start.
And you
do
all this yourself at home. You are the whole thing.
Yeah, this was completely recorded in my room. You know, me and my computer and the few little instruments that I have. So I usually just start writing the music. Once I get the track pretty much where I want, and if I think it fits, then I'll sit down and say, okay, rhythm wise, what would sound good here? And then I can come up with like the chorus. And once I've got the chorus down and recorded, that usually will generate the idea for how the rest of the song needs to go. And then I'll write the verses last.
So if somebody, somebody's hearing this, because I got to tell you, the idea that you can just now sit, as you said, like in your room at home and you can create an album, I mean, from scratch, and you can get it all the way to mixing and mastering and done. and have it, you know, and then loose it up on the world is really just amazing. I mean, I think we didn't have even a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how what is the bar for getting something like that done? What is, I mean, if somebody wants to create something that is of listenable quality, I mean, like, how much does it cost?
Well, I would say on average, I think about everything that I have probably at the time of purchase probably totals out around, I don't know, 6,000, maybe 7,000. But that's just, I've acquired different pieces of equipment over the years, purchased computers, purchased applications. And then the rest of it was really just spending years writing songs, recording them, listening to them, burning them on a CD, and then getting comfortable with how the mix works, reading articles. A lot of it's just like putting the time in. Like, you can spend as much or as little as you want, but once you learn how to get high quality sound, then after that it's just a matter of refining it and learning how to do it well enough so that when someone listens to your stuff versus someone else's, they don't get this, whoa, this doesn't sound the right. Same as this is professional. So it's not that difficult. You can typically spend, I don't know, $2,000-$3,000. And that seems like a lot, but over the course of like 10 years.
Dude, studio time will run you more than $2,000-$3,000.
Yeah, studio time will run you more than that.
I was just sitting here enjoying the fact that you were talking about, you know, how to get a professional quality sound while we were hearing the train going off in the background.
I got to tell you, though, that train sound is processed like nobody's business by the time it hits the listener here. That train is being heard through a high-quality microphone, the likes of which people have never before experienced in a podcast.
That is a stereo train.
That's really, it is. We're here with our good friend, Mr. Keelan King. His new project is Star Pilots Lament. You can find out more about it at starpilotslament.com. It comes out next Tuesday. It is June 7th. And you actually sent me this picture. I think you sent it to me over Skype or on my phone or two. But it was so great. It was like just this huge shot of like a hand holding the CD up to the camera, and then background I could sort of see that they had like the and I got to tell you, because I am this guy when I, you know, with my you know, I did this this project, this band, the Wonderstrucks, a few years ago, and it's the same thing where it's like they call and they go, your CDs are in, and you just, oh, it's so awesome.
Yeah.
And I remember driving to Super Digital, which is the place in Northwest that had actually done it, and picking them up. And I mean, I didn't wait till I got to the car. I mean, I was just like on the floor of the, I'm like, great, here's my credit card, you know, and just like opening them right there and taking it out, and you just look, and it's just fantastic.
That was the most nerve-wracking and exhilarating moment simultaneously, where I get this box and I'm like, do I really want to open this? Because this can be a whole lot of good or a whole lot of bad. I was so excited.
In terms of listening to it, in terms of seeing it, or just...
Well, in terms of seeing it, because essentially the company I used was in Salem, CD Poster Shop, which is brilliant. They do a great job. They knock it out of the park every time. But opening it up, you know, you just have to send off your files and your audio.
Right.
Give them the few instructions and go, okay, this is what I want. And you get it back and you're just like, okay, I got to cut this box open and... please don't let something be wrong.
Don't
with
suck.
And I open it up, and I've never been more pleased with any project I've ever gotten.
So. No, and I mean this in the best way. You're never happy about anything.
No,
and
I'm never happy.
Somebody just mentioned, this is awesome, and it's this huge hand like holding up this, you know, right up to the camera.
No, I'm like, I'm going to wet myself. This is brilliant.
Why? People probably wonder why go the physical CD route. You know, in 2011, why not just sell everything online?
Well, part of that is that so many people that I know here in town love having physical CDs. And so for me, it gave me a chance to do the artwork and give people something that I think looks cool and adds a visual to the audio, because you can listen to the album all you want. And how I recommend that is in a dark room with very few lights and a pair of headphones. But you can listen to the album and get the concepts. But when you have kind of like a little bit of artwork to go along with that so that you can kind of get visually immersed in it as well, then I think it goes a long way towards selling that whole concept. And every time I've made something, no matter how few people care about it, I've always gotten the question, where can I get a
right,
CD?
Right.
And so for me, it was like I wasn't going to do a huge run, but I wanted to do enough so that, hey, if people really want that experience, you know, sure, I'm not opposed to the digital age. And as a matter of fact, everything to do with this album has been digital up to this point. But I can't appreciate the fact that people really like to have a physical CD. And I think with this kind of project, like a physical CD with artwork really goes a long way towards selling the concept.
Well, because when the first when you sent me the link and I didn't even really know what it was, you said something like you sent me an email and you said, you know, like my enshrinement in the geek pantheon is assured. Click here, and I was like, well, what is it? And I clicked, and then the first thing you see is the cover art of the Star Pilot, and he's got the ship in the background, and it's just like this great color scheme, and it's just this beautiful, detailed, rich artwork, and then there's all the lyrics and the everything.
Oh,
and
as a matter of fact, if you haven't seen that, crack that open and there's more artwork inside.
We were actually just, wow, that's cool looking. We were actually just, so we actually put a pin in this conversation early in the show because we wanted to wait till you were here. We were talking about the idea of the digital age, which I mean, obviously, as the delivery mechanism for this show, obviously, you know, it's not like I'm opposed to that stuff, but you do with music. You lose liner notes, and you lose the cover art, and the idea of just sitting there and examining it for nuance, and the idea of what were sort of an Easter egg in terms of album design and in terms of artwork. And it's just there is, I don't know if it's better or worse, but it certainly is different, than it was.
Yeah, and there's a little less than what you would get with the physical CD, but if anyone does want to purchase the digital version only. There is a digital booklet that comes along with that download, so you will get some version of the cover art that goes along with this.
By the way, I got to say, this is probably the first and only album in the history of time that thanks Dennis Pitzenbarger for anything. So,
yeah, man, Dennis is my man.
Points for weirdness. So, again, people can find this at starpilotslament.com, starpilotslament.com. And we should actually play, let us play a track from this
sure,
here. What would you like us to play? I got the whole thing here in front of me. So.
I would say... a little something a little more upbeat, maybe track 9, 1, 2.
Okay, I've got that right here. So without further ado, this is 1, 2 from Star Pilot's Lament from Mr. Keelan King. You're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program.
Drive 2 pulse pistols and a weapons bay full of pissed off missiles. You can leave now or kiss that ship goodbye, cause I'm here to help you die. 1 more drive, 2 pulse pistols and a weapons bay full of pissed off missiles. You can leave now or kiss that ship goodbye, cause I'm here to help you die.
Warning, incoming hostile entities detected. Preparing for evasive maneuvers.
It appears they did not appreciate that escape. They shut down the jump gate so they could retaliate. It's a little too late and they can gravitate to these nuts while I punch in the coordinates. I spot 6 fighters of the class bit fire. Those ships can shit fire, but my ship's a bit lighter. Bring it on, fools want get it, then come with it. My weapons are destroyer class, retrofitted. I got nothing but danger for deep space rangers. I got gallows to hang ya, constructed in my hangar. Or I can vaporize with a heated surprise that'll fill your planet skies with blackened eyes and thighs. Send out your or your four-star generals. I send them back to you in a box as minerals. On that note, they're within fire range, so I turn the ship around to tell them a few things. I got 1 more drive, 2 pulse pistols, and a weapons bay full of pissed off missiles. You can leave now or kiss that ship goodbye, cause I'm here to help you die. 1 more drive, 2 pulse pistols, and a weapons bay full of pissed off missiles. You can leave now or kiss that ship goodbye, cause I'm here to help you die.
Incoming. External damage increasing. Shields at 65%.
Thank you.
Shields at 65%.
Yes, I know. These idiots chatting on an insecure channel, so I tapped into the comms from my control panel. First 2 want to fly wide formation and limit the option for escape and create a perimeter. As soon as they broke formation, no hesitation. They palm hull busters, oxygen conflagration. I hear the screams as 2 ships careen off course and burned up in their own defense screen. 4 left, I mean 4 deaths are on deck, and the 2 these ships decided to be next. I focus sunlight on the pilot to the right while blinded, he crashed into the other. Good night. 2 fighters left in the duel to the death, so I switched off my target and computer deep breath. I hit number one with a magnetic rail gun. Last one and like a bitch, he's already on the run.
I got one more drive, two post pistols, and a weapons bay full of pissed off missiles. You can leave now, kiss that shit goodbye, cause I'm here to help you die. One more drive, two post pistols, and a weapons bay full of pissed off missiles. You can leave now, kiss that shit goodbye, cause I'm here to help you die. One warp drive, two pulse pistols, and a weapons bay full of pissed off missiles. You can leave now or kiss that ship goodbye, cause I'm here to help you die. One warp drive, two pulse pistols, and a weapons bay full of pissed off missiles. You can leave now or kiss that ship goodbye, cause I'm here to help you die.
It's the Rick Emerson radio program that is 1-2 from Star Pilot's Lament, Mr. Keelan King. So do you see what I'm talking about when I say that it's like, it is just, I mean, it really is just a combination of things I think that have never been combined before. So well done on that score.
Thank you. Yeah, as Sarah called me once, a giant dork. So
I mean, you know, here's the, listening to not just this, but this stuff like your the Azure Noir stuff too. It's like your choruses all have this, and I don't know enough about like music theory or whatever to know, but they all have what I would. It's like a weird like a minor key sound. Like they have a sort of angular melodies to them. So I want to know like what has gone into your head over however many years that, you know, that this is the result. Like, what is this a combination of?
I really wish I could tell you. It's just that kind of minor sound to music has always just been the one thing that grabs me about any musician. Like, any of the artists that I've listened to over, you know, my 36 years on this planet, there's my favorites always seem to have some of that in their music. Maybe not all the time, but they lean on it from time to time. And it's just one of those things that I don't want to call it fate or anything like that, but it just seems like it's just that thing that grabs me about music. And I don't hear it enough in the music that I like. So it's like one of those things where, you know, if you want something done right, you gotta do it yourself. Right. And I've always felt like I'd like to hear more of that in my music. So it's like, well, the only way for me to get more of that in my music is to make that kind of music myself. And you know, at the end of the day, hope that, you know, other people want to hear it as well. But I have so many favorites that do that kind of thing that I want more of it.
I'm telling you.
I never get enough.
You are your people ought to be on the phone right now, like contacting like every science fiction convention that is happening anywhere on planet Earth in the next like 18 months. And just
I tell you what, the further I can go with this, the better. It's never been a big thing for me, you know, fame and fortune, but I do want to be able to like get involved where, hey, I love sci-fi. I want to be a part of sci-fi. So, you know, if I can't actually leave the planet Earth and go somewhere, then damn it, I want to be involved in movies, music, whatever I can do that kind of forward science fiction and to be into that kind of stuff is what I would love to do. So, yeah, any chance I see to bludgeon someone to death with this CD, I'm going to do it.
You're such a colossal nerd. I mean that in the best possible way. Someone's asking, what do you mean by his people, Rick?
What do you mean, you people?
we'll do some other stuff here in a moment, then we'll come back and we'll talk about this more in just a skosh. But people have asked about the website. It's starpilotslament.com. It is starpilotslament.com. And again, the release is Tuesday, June 7th, and there's going to be a listening party this Saturday. What time is that happening?
The doors should open about 8:30. I plan to get started around 9. Hopefully, you know, it is – I should add – I forgot about this earlier today. It is 21 and over. Which should go without saying at the Space Room, but right, you never right. know. But planning to get started around 9. Going to play the album first, put on some other music for a little while, and then come back later in the night and play it again. So if you do plan on coming, you don't make it right at the beginning and you have to come later, don't worry. You won't miss your chance. And there will be a limited number of copies available on Saturday. And if by chance they happen to sell out, I will still make it available to people who still want to buy. I have to do another run, but they take about a week to come back. So if I do happen to run out at the event, I will make sure that anyone else that still wants a copy will be taken care of.
One other thing, actually, that I wanted to ask you, and then we'll do some of the Taser Watch waits for no man. So we'll do some news here in just a second. But I wanted to ask you about something that I guess maybe 2 or 3 years ago that it was back on MySpace, which is sort of maybe that tells us when it was. But you'd written a long post, a long sort of public, you know, just a blog on MySpace about it, because you'd released hip hop records and sort of and done, and it didn't sound like everything else, but it was a more straightforward kind of hip hop certainly than this.
Right.
But you wrote this long post that I don't even know that you mentioned it. I think I just happened to see it one night, and it was really great. And I don't want to say it was sad, but it was sort of bittersweet. But it was this almost like this farewell note to that, you know, to hip hop in a certain way that you said you were just sort of done with it. You were kind of washing your hands of it. And tell me a bit about that and how you transitioned away from that.
Well, what started that was when I was in Vegas, I was doing NBA summer leagues, and I was on a fan board for Pistons fans back in Michigan. But because I lived in Vegas, I could go to the NBA Summer League down there. And what I would do is I would go down there, record all the games, and then put up highlights on YouTube and stuff. And this was when people were getting in trouble for putting well-known tracks behind their videos on YouTube. So what I would do was just take songs that I had written and use them as the backing tracks for my YouTube videos. Well, aside from the video, some smartass decided to come in and comment about how horrible my music was. Well, I understand that. I'm no stranger to criticism, but it was completely unwarranted, and that's what set me off. And basically what it boiled down to was that, you know, I was well aware that I was not, you know, I'm no Jay-Z, as it were. However, you know, I'm not the worst cat to ever pick up a microphone. So that kind of unwarranted, kind of blind dislike for anything that doesn't fit into this small box of what acceptable hip hop or rap was at the time really kind of bothered me. And my biggest thing with that whole note, and I still have that on a hard drive somewhere, I had written it out first and then posted it. So it just basically meant that for me to say, you know, look, Maybe I'm not good enough to be one of the top rappers that ever, you know, graced the stage. That's fine. But at the end of the day, you know, I want to make music. And however I see fit to do that, I'm going to continue to try to do it. And just, you know, being a jackass and insulting me is not going to stop me from doing that. But it's also unnecessary, you know. And it was one of those things where, you know, it was right when that whole, you know, don't be a hater thing started up and people were going on. And I hate using lingo like that. I hate trying to chide people against stuff they don't like, because there's a lot of stuff that I don't like. But I also don't go around pissing on other people's projects just for the hell of it. So it kind of upset me a bit at the time. And it was kind of, I was fairly bitter about it. But it was just more or less that, you know what? Okay, fine. If I have to play this game just to be considered a rapper or to be allowed to do it without someone coming in and trying to piss on my project, then fine. I can continue to make music and do all that stuff without having to subject myself to the jackassery. So, you know, enjoy your rap music, and I'll go this way.
It reminded me a little bit of what our friend Kristen Bowie, she put up a blog post after when she left CBS, and just sort of about how, you know, she loved radio but was kind of done with it. Mm-hmm. And she was moving, which I think a lot of people sort of in our circle have, you know, have either said that or thought that, or, you know, I mean, I've certainly made observations to that effect, that, you know, that it's not like I regret working in radio, and I'm not saying that, like, there's no world in which I would ever work in radio again, but just that it, at a certain point, you just kind of go, like, this is, you know, what they're doing and what I do are not necessarily compatible, and I'm going to kind of go off and do my own thing, because it's like the square peg round hole thing. And so I saw that blog post a couple years ago when you wrote that, and it was right after that, or it seemed like it was right after that, that you came out with the Azure Noir album. And I just from my vantage point, just as a listener, just as a fan, it was really great, actually, because it did seem like you were just sort of, you know, you weren't going to do what a lot of people do, which is just try to look at the top 40 or look at whatever the top 10 records are and just clone whatever that is.
Yeah.
You were going to
just
do what you wanted to do. And if it sold, great. And if not, like, at least you could go to bed at night knowing that you made something that you liked and that you were happy with.
That's more or less how I felt about it. I mean, hell, some idiot on, you know, the YouTube comments section isn't going to give me any more grief than say, like my own father does. I mean, you know, I'm sure, as you know, and Don, you may have had this at some point, you know, a lot of times, no matter what you do, you know, your parents are going to think that there's one way for you to be successful. Right. And if you don't take that path, then it can't be right.
No, I wouldn't know anything about that.
So, you know, it's like, I'm already dealing with that. And so it's like, for me, it's like, you know what? You have to be enough of an individual to say, you know what? To hell with it. This is what I want to be doing. And I hope, you know, people dig it. And so that's what brought this project on. Like, I think 5 or 10 years ago, I may have never even tried to do something like this because I would have maybe thought, well, what's the point? And right. Who's going to buy it? But I'm just at a point now where it's like, this is the stuff that I love. And so if, you know, it's one thing, the geek numbers are small enough. Black geek numbers are infinitesimal. Like, it's like you, there's no rocks to look under. Like, you know, we're spread out. It's like, no, you know, anytime you can get two of us in a room together, we are going to party. So, that's the thing. It's like, you know, to hell with it. I'm going to do what I want to do, and hopefully everyone else digs it and wants to come along.
But I think, you know, probably anybody you can think of in any creative field, whether it's music or radio or movies or whatever, I think a lot of people have that moment, you know, that moment of self-realization where you did. You know, it was when I realized, like, I was just never going to be a DJ. That, like, I couldn't just get on and just play Lynyrd Skynyrd records and grin like an idiot and
right.
and do, you know, Traffic and Weather together and talk for, you know, for 40 seconds at a time and be good at that. And I'm not knocking people who do this. People who do that and they're great at it and they make a great living, that's fine. But I'm not able to do that. And even when I tried to do it, it sucked because that's just not, like, I lack that skill set, as they say.
Yeah, there's something, you know, to be said for being able to do something well. I mean, there are certain skills I have in my day job that I'm good at, but I'm miserable doing them. So it's like, there's that, you know, push and pull where it's like, you know, do you want to just do what's going to make you relatively successful, or are you going to spend some time doing what you want? Yeah, you know, you take a little bit less. You know, I'm not going to sell 500,000 copies of this, but I'm very, very, very happy with this project. I'm proud of it. I'm glad to hand the people the disc. I'm glad to have people, you know, I'm happy to have people go look at it. So it goes a long way for me to be this happy with the project.
And that really, I mean, and this, you know, and this all, you know, people can, sometimes this sounds corny, but it's true that the value of being proud of doing something and that it is something you're proud of and something that it is as you visualize it and it represents what you want to do. I mean, I would, you know, it's like, well, you know, it's like with this or even being on the, like, an AM station as opposed to KUFO, which, you know, as much as the KUFO thing, you know, certainly was interesting and there were some high points there. It's like I would rather have 100% of the audience that really, like, is into what we do and, you know, and where we can do a show that we actually enjoy. You know, I'd rather have that than, you know, than have the 3% of this much larger audience, most of whom are just totally indifferent to whatever I was doing, or just flat out, like, loathed me, because it was just, you know, because it's not what I was able to do. And it's, I mean, and Dawn, I mean, Dawn goes home and makes chocolates named after H.P. Lovecraft demons. I mean, you know, like, you seriously. I mean, it's like, you know, you should probably be making, I don't know what you should just be making pink cupcakes, probably, right? But yeah. I mean, you just don't. But you don't want to do that. You're not a pink cupcake making lady. So
no, I am not. Sir.
No, you are not. All right, we're here with our good friend Mr. Keelan King. The website is starpilotslament.com. We will talk more about that here in just a bit. But before we do anything else, at the news desk, it is Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Well, we actually have a corpse watch.
I don't know that. I just got to do that thing of minimizing all my stuff again. You're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Here is your corpse watch for Thursday.
I'm digging up bones. I'm digging up bones. Exhuming things that's better left alone. I'm resurrecting memories of love that's dead and gone. Yet tonight I'm sitting alone.
Here is Dawn Taylor with your corpse watch.
A body was found inside a bed frame under a mattress at the Capitol Motel early today in Salt Lake City. Hotel staffers called police about 2:15 a.m. after a member of the cleaning staff found the body in room 12 of the hotel.
The magic fingers were just the beginning, Dawn.
Police Sergeant Sean Josephson said, there were definitely suspicious circumstances. Police have not said whether there were signs of trauma to the body or what may have caused the person's death. There was no sign of a struggle in the room. Lieutenant David Craycroft of the Salt Lake City Police Department said, it's just the positioning of the body that's suspicious.
What with it being inside the frame and all,
yeah,
and under the mattress.
So we're treating this as more than just an overdose.
That's not really a thing where you trip and just land underneath the box spring.
No.
Was Antonio Banderas anywhere in the vicinity?
Well done, sir.
Yeah, they said the bed frame reaches to the floor, so it would have been possible for a person to roll under the bed.
Does it? Do they know what sort of hotel this might be? Might this be a hotel for the budget traveler?
It is the
downwardly mobile gentleman.
The Capitol Motel at 1749 South State Street.
Oh, I know the Capitol Motel. I used to live, actually. What was the address?
1749 South State.
I lived at 2100 South State Street, so that is exactly the kind of neighborhood. I'll put it this way. I lived right behind a grocery store, a supermarket named Reams. So there you go. That's the sort of place that it is. Oh, and then there was one of those rent the hot tubs by the hour places across the street from me. Yeah.
Well, Sophia Salas checked into that motel room on Wednesday night, but said the stench in the room almost knocked her out. She returned to the motel manager and demanded a different room because of the smell. And this is her describing that.
I went into the room and it stunk hella bad. Not like cigarettes.
Oh, wow.
Pee, just foul.
Saul says
not cigarettes or pee, more like a death, maybe, or decomposition.
It stunk hella bad.
Stunk hella bad, but not like cigarettes or pee. And I think we can all agree, look, if there ever was a time when you're going to use the phrase it stunk hella bad, finding a decomposing goddamn body inside your bed, that really is one of those times.
What does her life consist of that she has to go to cigarettes and pee as the two things to compare it to?
You know, I know the smell of cigarettes and pee, it was not that.
And the thing is, even without singing, like, you know exactly what she looks like. I mean, it's like without any problem at all, you can conjure exactly what that woman looks
like. Yeah, she's missing a couple of teeth.
Is her hair blonde? Is it back in a scrunchie?
No, it's dark and back in a scrunchie.
Ah, fantastic. Wonderful. No, the women like that always have a scrunchie happening somewhere in the hair.
That's her.
That is exactly, okay, except that she's not blonde. That is exactly, even down to the sunglasses and that she's wearing, like the hoodie things she's wearing.
Yeah.
That is exactly what I pictured that woman looking like.
Yeah.
Excellent.
That would be right.
Behold the average Salt Lake citizen.
Police have not released whether the victim was male or female. The body was taken to Utah State Medical Examiner's Office to determine the cause of death.
Jesus God. All right, there you go. There's your corpse watch for Thursday.
I'm digging up.
Stunk hella bad.
Hella bad.
Not like pee. Not like cigarettes. Not like methadone when you spill it. Something else.
Sorry about that.
That's right. I'm resurrecting now. Excellent. Here's the Rick Emerson Radio program. We'll continue here in just a moment. I said that I would mention this Blake Lively thing just so we can sort of get it done. But so this is from several people, but of course our good friend Jesus in the OC, who is like he's like quick draw McGraw with the Blake Lively stuff, because he would wreck that just. He would wreck it. What did he say? He would wreck it like Hurricane Andrew on the Floridian coastline. So this is from Egotastic. More purported Blake Lively photos leaked across the universe. Let's see. So there's a second set of self-published camera phone pictures, and her reps are apparently still saying it's not her. It still looks just. It still obviously is her. I mean, unless there's just some sort of exceptionally gifted Photoshop artist who has like a lot of free time on his hands and access to it seems like any number of actual photographs of Blake Lively, which would have been required to make this really. I mean, we're talking like full on like Kubrick faking the moon landing stuff. I mean, if these aren't of her. But the best part is that so there's this whole second set. There's I think 1, 2, there's 12 of them, and all of them are labeled. They all have this sort of hard encoded on. They are all labeled with the caption, "Oh yes, Blake's rep. These are totally fake. We really, really believe you. Do you want more? BTW, thanks for all the faps."
Well, some of the ones that are just of, like, you know, somebody's butt. I mean, granted, that could pretty much be anybody. But the one of that was originally the first thing with the chick standing in the bathroom. It's fairly obvious that that's probably her.
Well, and there's a shot, like a topless shot you can see here, where she's actually she actually has the tattoos on her that she has in the town. Because when she did the movie The Town, where she plays, what's his name, she plays Affleck's girlfriend or whatever, she has those, like, star tattoos. And those are actually on on whoever it might be in these photographs. I just love the idea, and of course, Moore is spelled M-O-A-R. So I love the idea that they actually take the time to address her representatives, like specifically, and then to quote, thank them for all the faps. So, and by the way, they speak for all of us there, and not just Jesus and the OC, but for all of us.
She's got a little bit of that Count Chocula chin going on, though.
Yeah, but I mean, really, here's the thing, though. You know what the boobs are? It's like when you go to Sears to get your picture taken when you're a kid, and it's like you get a baby, and he doesn't want to sit still, and the guy's like waving the puppet to sort of like distract you from the fact that like you're having to sit there in like some scritchy, uncomfortable sweater while you wait for your family to situate themselves to get there. Boobs are the puppet waved by the photographer of the ugly chin. Some, you know what I mean? It's sort of a thing. It's, you know, it's a thing that, you know,
I am
you don't,
writing that down you know, right now.
Covered in fire ants. You don't notice.
I believe
the,
Francesco Scavullo was the one who first said that in the 1970s. He was assuring Elizabeth Taylor not to worry that.
Here's the other thing, by the way, is that there's a couple of these shots that
boobs on the
you. You were talking about, like, why do guys just want to take a picture of their wang and send it off to some chick? And there's a couple of these. I mean, and if we assume that some of these, especially the ones where it's like her naked form and her face are visible at the same time. In other words, it's not like there's pictures of her face and pictures of her bosoms. There's pictures. It's like when you watch a movie and you're going, is he really playing the piano in Shine? And then they do the long pullback and yes, he is. There's some of these, though, that are just sort of odd, like they're like these weird like down blouse like photos, and so I gotta wonder like what if she took all of these, like what was the presumable purpose of them, and was it just to send off to whoever she was like bonking at the time or whatever?
Yeah.
Everybody sort of seems to be operating under the assumption that they're just there to promote Green Lantern, which doesn't make a lot of sense to me, because it's not like Green Lantern is a property that needs promoting, and I can't imagine that if they want to make it like a, forgive me, tentpole picture where they try to get the whole family in. It's not like this is really going to do the job for that. So, because you've made that those observations, like she just coincidentally has a film coming out, but it's like what would be the point of that?
I don't know.
In relation to the film,
I don't know. It just seems like, you know, the movie's coming out. They're starting to really promote the movie, and then all of a sudden it's like Blake Lively's dating Leonardo DiCaprio. Blake Lively got a naked picture. Blake Lively's boobs.
It's just okay, lost sure. on me, like. Women have boobs. Like, why is this a surprise? And what? Yet we have porn. Like, why? I fail to see the need to burn up the Google talking about Blake Lively's images.
Thank you, sir. Thank
it's
you.
It's not about like the boobs as such. To me, it's the whole ongoing.
I thought the boobs were the puppet.
Well, no, the boobs. Well, that's in life.
Oh, okay.
And also, when I'm looking at these photographs of her, it's not like I just sit at home and like Google pictures of Blake Lively. To me, it's like the whole phenomenon of.
I hate to ask this question, but. Will that then launch a whole series of Show Pony and her two puppets? I'm just curious because it's not me, it's the listeners.
To me, it's like it's the idea that like in 2011 you would take what we were talking about the other day, the idea that you would take photographs of yourself, knowing like if you photograph it, it will be on the net. Like that's the thing to me. I just wonder at what point publishers have got to just like step in and have some sort of. They've got to have something in their contract with their clients saying, like, you're not going to have a cell phone. If you have a cell phone, it's not going to have a camera. If it has a camera, it's not going to be. You're not going to be able to post them anywhere unless I see them all. Because this would not have happened 30 or 40 years ago. There was a sort of publicity system in place that protected stars from their own idiotic behavior. That's the like their boobs all over the internet. To me, it's the phenomenon of stars doing these sorts of things, which they know will inevitably be released. Or like the wiener guy taking a photograph of his junk, and then you know it ends up on Twitter, which you knew would happen.
Well, the thing is, though, this could be a very specifically crafted. Moment in her career as well. I mean, she did Gossip Girl, and then she has a high profile as being somebody who wears clothes very well. She's dressed by a lot of famous designers. She gets photographed a lot wearing very, very expensive designer clothes. She's gotten like awards and laws for being somebody who, you know, she's just like this awesome clothes hanger, apparently. And maybe this is one of those things where because we have reached a point that it's not so shocking that it's a career killer, that maybe it was actually a conscious decision. Like, ooh, we will leak these photos of my boobs. It'll make me seem like a little bit more accessible, a little bit sexier.
Tasha Yar outside the window. Don't do it. Don't do it.
Yeah, that is. I mean, it's like seeing if I always assumed that if that was going to be the case, like if they were going to make the big decision to disrobe, that that's a thing that you save for like the high profile, you know, film where you do it because it's true to the character, or you do it when like Hugh Hefner finally offers you, you know, enough money or whatever. It's like, you know, it's like Scarlett Johansson's not doing that because she understands that, you know, pretty people don't give it away. Somebody pay for that. So it continues to amaze me. The extent to which celebrities do things that no publicist in their right mind would ever allow them to do if it were channeled to the publicist. And you got to wonder at what point in the sort of Hollywood star system and the farm team system that they've got there, where you've got like your Britney Spears and your Christina Aguilera, who are like, you know, Disney basically adopts them when they're like 9 years old, where at some point they're going to start instituting these shackles on them early on about what they can and cannot do and what the publicist will have control over to sort of protect their public image. I mean, that's the thing that I find fascinating.
Isn't that why you're seeing all these publicists up and quit?
Maybe.
Like, you see sometimes, that a lot, yeah. Where publicists are like, all right, the hell with it. I'm out.
Because they just realize that there's nothing they can do about it. That, you know, Charlie Sheen is going to do what Charlie Sheen is going to do. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
The Bedford, New Hampshire Police Department used a distressed rabbit call to corner a fox that attacked three people and two children on Wednesday morning. Apparently children, by the way, are not people. Three people and two children.
Also, they were attacked by a fox?
Yes. Joan Schutz's husband was one of the first people to run into the gray fox on their front lawn in Bedford. Her husband saw the fox carrying a cat. Schutz said, "You think of an animal like that as being scared of you, not looking at you like it might come for you." The fox eventually dropped the cat and ran off. Bernard said authorities were concerned that the fox may have been rabid before the animal was captured. Police called the local schools to bring children in from recess to avoid another biting incident. Animal control officers used an animal call box that I guess sounded like a distressed rabbit to bring the fox to them.
The worst job ever has got to be going around and jabbing animals with sticks so you can record their sounds in distress.
I think so.
All right, bring in the baby seal. Christ. Club. And then you just record it. That's it. You go home and you jab at your own ears after that.
So they lured the fox. And then I like this. The fellow from the Bedford Police Department said, "It was a gray fox, so we're pretty confident it was the same animal. We had a witness who observed the first incident, and he identified the fox as the same one we
captured." Do they have like an artist sketch or like a profile picture of the fox?
Oh, that's him.
If you've seen this fox and he's sort of like skulking out of the back of a chicken coop somewhere, you don't really think of foxes as attacking people or presenting any sort of a threat. I don't know that I've ever actually seen a fox in real life now that I say these words out loud. I'm not sure that I've ever, I don't think I've ever actually seen a fox that wasn't in a photograph somewhere. I don't even know that. I
like the fact that he was carrying the cat.
Well,
he was,
yeah,
like, have it over his shoulder.
Well, I mean, look, it's not like you can trust the cat to walk to your foxhole or whatever by itself.
Get in the bag.
They're completely untrustworthy. No. Like, foxes are, you know, one of those creatures that's sort of fascinating because they're always used as, you know, as like a benchmark of cleverness and skill in the animal world. So maybe that's why. And are they everywhere? I mean, do they live... Or is it like a thing that they, you know, they're like...
They did get away the first time.
I'm not sure if they're everywhere, but I mean,
are there foxes in Portland?
I don't know. I know I used to see them in Southern California. Often there was an area called, unsurprisingly, Fox Hills, that once it was sort of raised and then covered with condominiums, you would still occasionally see foxes going around going, where do I live now?
My front door was here somewhere. God damn it. Ah, crap. All right.
These are my hills.
Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
So did you get that monkey watch sound that the fellow sent us?
Did you say that was emailed?
It was indeed.
To me? I do not have that.
Good. That means you have to do the monkey watch vocally.
Yeah, I do. That was...
Which is a highlight of my listening day.
Well, I'm glad I can amuse. Somebody sent that, but that did not appear in my email box. So,
terrible.
Okay, you got to warn people when you're going to do
sorry.
That.
Well, I didn't know it was still turned on. I thought you'd...
Let brother know when you're going to do that. All right.
I plugged the thing in.
Okay.
Okay, well, let's see. I think I have it here.
Just let me know.
Okay.
This moment of waiting for Dawn to locate some file or other inside her voluminous inbox is brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find out more about them at squireselectric.com or 503-252-1688. 0-9. You can also go online to facebook.com/Squires Electric. You can see examples of their handiwork and find out stuff that they have done to help listeners just like yourselves and people all over Portland and beyond. Actually, they went out to, I think they were like a goddamn North Plains or something the other day. So, I mean, really, that's dedication. They'll come to you. So if you got the, you know, if you got the issues with wires, you're going to be installing something, or if you're going to be like heading towards summer, you plug in your air conditioner, you don't want it to like blow out the fuse and nuke that transformer thing that's on the box outside. You're going to make sure that everything is done right the first time. And if you're going to be renting out your place, you're going to be buying a house that somebody else is selling to you as though everything is in flawless and working condition. You want to make sure for yourself that that is in fact the case. Contact Squires Electric. They're licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. When it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier. They are Squires Electric. I say wrapping this up with an inflection to indicate to Dawn that we're very nearly done. And yes, she'll need the sound she was hunting for any minute now.
Okay.
As I prepare to conclude this live read for Squires Electric, my cadence is indicating I am now winding down. Are we ready?
Yeah.
All right, so excellent. Here is,
let's see what happens.
Dawn Taylor. Excellent. I can do something with that. All right. When you get a chance, you put that in the Dropbox.
I will.
I can fashion that into something as well. Here's your monkey watch for Thursday.
Animal welfare groups in South Africa. Welfare groups, okay, in South Africa have condemned the barbaric killing of a vervet monkey by a mob of township residents who said it was a talking witch. The monkey was beaten, pelted with stones, shot at, and then doused with gas and burned to death in Kagiso near Johannesburg.
How would you confuse
by residents chanting "Kill the witch"?
Okay, even if one presumes that there are witches, and you know there are, you know, monkeys, how would you confuse a monkey with anything that talks?
I don't know.
Where was this again?
Johannesburg, South Africa.
See, oh, I have such a hard... All right, well, I'm going to let that go because I'm always trying to make the case that, you know, deep Africa isn't as bad as people think it is. But when you beat the hell out of a monkey and then burn it after it's dead.
I mean, let's be honest. We got people like in Bend here who are like praying over their daughter's goiter and, you know, like waving bits of sage around thinking, you know, that it's going to cure her. So, you know, it's not like ignorance is confined to one section of the globe. I'm just fascinated. Not that they thought that the monkey was a witch, a talking witch.
Yeah.
Like you'd think that the talking would be sort of the make or break point.
Well, the vervet monkey had reportedly wandered into the township after becoming separated from its troop. Residents said the monkey had been going around town talking to people,
loudly demanding lulls.
And they believed it was linked to witchcraft and would bring them bad luck. They pelted the monkey with stones, and the monkey fled into a tree, but was pulled down, put in a bucket, and doused with gas.
Now, what are they saying what the monkey, what he was demanding, or if he was just issuing orders, or was he just making conversation? Like, hey,
we're really not sure.
Boy, Ted's put on some weight. You know, where can I get some ice cream? I mean, is it? You can't have a story, and I'm not faulting you for this, where you're claiming that you destroyed a monkey because it was a witch, and the reason it was a witch is because the monkey was walking around town, quote, talking to people, and then not reveal what the monkey said.
No, they don't actually say what the...
That's an important detail. If a monkey starts speaking, somebody needs to write it down. These are dividing lines, I would say, in the evolution of life on this planet.
Well, Cora Bailey of the community-led animal welfare got a call from an upset resident, and when she arrived, she saw a big crowd gathered around the remains of the burning monkey. She later said she was horrified to see racist comments that have appeared online in response to the incident. She said, every time this happens, it's people in the community who call us. Cruelty to animals is not a racial thing. I've worked in townships for 20 years, and there are good and bad people in all communities. Bailey said the dreadful superstition about monkeys and witchcraft in some communities is fueled by ignorance about the animals and a lack of knowledge that vervet monkeys can be separated from their troops or displaced by the destruction of their natural habitat. Johannes Bapela, who called Bailey, said the claims of witchcraft were totally baseless, and he thought the monkey was killed more from a mob mentality.
Disturbed by actually showing up to a barbecue. Like, she... Nothing about the beating. It was like she showed up as the monkey was being cooked.
And that they had to note, like, on the record that there was no actual witchcraft that they were able to find. They couldn't really discern that there was any. And so I'm wondering
monkey
if this is...
probably not talking.
But a monkey witch, like, talking, there would also have to be spellcasting. Was there any...
That really assumes a great amount of dexterity, both verbally and I would imagine physically, in the part of the monkey.
Well,
he's got to be wielding a wand.
Monkeys do have those tiny little hands.
Well, this is my thing.
Hey, if I catch a monkey casting a Patronus charm, I will have something to say about it.
Will you pelt it with stones and set it on fire?
I'm not sure I would pelt it with stones, but
I'd probably invite it over for dinner.
Challenge it to some sort of a face-off at the Tri-Wizard tournament. Is it just that there was some sort of like
a wizard's chest?
Suppose it was a monkey that just like wandered away from a circus troupe or something, and so it like came into town with a top hat on a unicycle or something, or with a monocle, and
that'd be even worse.
And it sort of was behaving, you know, it had human-like traits, and they immediately thought, well, this is no good. Let's pelt it and burn it. Poor monkey.
It's casting spells. I got some lotteries to win.
Jesus. All right, there you go. There's your monkey watch for...
There is one thing that we're not considering is it might really have been a monkey witch.
Well, I suppose. If so, I would imagine it's the last one we'll see for a while. It might have been a scout. Like when you're like when ants sent a few into the bathroom just to see if like they're going to get squashed. And then if they don't come back, it's like, Fred never came back. I guess we can't go there. So let's close that out with your the monkey watch theme.
Darn.
Oh, God. Okay, do I need it?
No. I've got it.
Okay.
Here we go.
Okay. Excellent. There is your Monkey Watch for Thursday on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. All right.
Okay.
Who was it that sent that in? What was the listener's name?
Listener Jeff.
Excellent. I will whip that into something serviceable over the next day or two. We'll have some more news here in just a moment. We're here with our good friend Mr. Keelan King. His new project, Star Pilots Lament. You can find out more about that at starpilotslament.com. The listening party is going to be this Saturday. That is the 4th at the Space Room. And then the actual release is going to be on Tuesday, June 7th. That'll be available. And again, you can find out more about that at starpilotslament.com. You mentioned coming from Michigan. And then did you come from Michigan straight to Portland?
Yeah, I came from Michigan to Portland, left in 2004 to go to Las Vegas.
And then back here.
And then back here in February.
And it was Detroit. You're from Detroit.
I'm originally from Saginaw. People from Detroit get very angry.
I didn't know if there was like some sort of a
people who aren't from Detroit proper saying they're from Detroit. So anytime anyone asks me that, I will make that distinction because I don't want anyone from Detroit looking for me.
It's very much like it's like a Portland tigered kind of a thing.
Probably.
Okay, so you're from Michigan and then Portland, then Vegas, then back to Portland. We talked about the digital age of music earlier. For all intents and purposes, does it matter now where you're based as a musician, or is it just, is one city pretty much the same as another, unless you need to be in a city for something very specific?
Well, it sort of boils down that way. I'll use this as an example, a group called The Foreign Exchange. It was a rapper named Fonte from North Carolina, and a producer named Nicolay from the Netherlands. They put out an incredible project, emailing things back and forth across the ocean, and the album was brilliant. So technically, no, you can get pristine quality, you can do all of the things you need to do to compile an album and get all of that stuff handled without being in the same hemisphere, actually. Where I found it to be an issue is if you're collaborating with anyone else, where it may end up at a physical performance, an event, or anything that you want to do that involves groups of other people and other events as opposed to just your own launch or anything like that. It helps to be in the same city. Take Portland, for instance. There's a great music scene in Portland, whereas Vegas, it's a lot of cover bands and pop rock and stuff that doesn't really... It's not very conducive to the local musician, I should say. Portland is completely the opposite. And there are so many things here, especially with like a project like mine, which is tech-oriented, geek-oriented, things like that. So, I mean, there are cities where the support base is just there where you can promote easily. You can communicate with other artists easily. You can do a lot of the other ancillary things aside from just the recording process that add to the project. So for me, no, it doesn't necessarily matter that I would be in one town or the other, but in terms of like where I would want to be if I have to promote this album, Portland wins hands down just because of the nature of the city and the people in the city and the type of events and things that go on here. This is a city that will accept and embrace something like this, whereas Vegas, you know, no one cares.
Right.
So really, unless you've got an incredible online marketing team in place where you've got all of these different avenues to get the word out worldwide, and anybody does no matter where you're living, but if you want anything to go on where you are or to get involved with the other creative people where you are, it really does help to be kind of in the same general area. Because I can still promote this online just as well as I would in Vegas. But, you know, I can't attend any of the events or anything. Or like me holding a listening party in Vegas, it'll be me and a CD player. So, you know,
would be a party in itself.
Oh, you better believe it. One of us is getting kicked out. Either I'm getting kicked out or the CD player is getting kicked out. One of us is leaving.
Well, I wrote a little essay about this for Facebook and a couple weeks ago after doing the signing for the book, the Zombie Economics signing, and Mike Russell was there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was like he was almost literally the last person in line. I felt really bad because it was a pretty big turnout. We were really happy with that. But he waited, you know, like a pretty good stretch of time to get up to the front. And he, you know, and I said, oh, you know, thanks so much for the help. Thanks for, you know, really getting the word out. And thanks for, you know, because he put it up on Twitter and he was talking about it. And I said, thanks for the help with this. And he goes, well, he's like, you didn't need my help. Look at all these people. And then I wrote this whole post about, like, he just doesn't, you know, he was looking at it from the wrong end of the telescope. The reason that there was such a turnout was because of, you know, Mike Russell. And it was because of, you know, you guys and Court and Bobby and everybody sort of talking about it. And there really is it is a self-supporting, collective in a way that, I mean, first of all, wouldn't have been possible a few years ago. And also, I just don't think happens in Portland. It probably isn't unique in this way, but I think Portland is distinct. I don't think it happens in a lot of cities to the extent that it does Portland. Portland really does seem to have a stranglehold on that.
Yeah, no, you hit the nail on the head. And the way that I see it is kind of the same way that you look at it. Like, I, you know, huge thanks to Court and Fatboy, Geek in the City, you, Greg and Sarah. Like, if it wasn't for you guys, like, it would be me sitting in my room posting this online and hoping that somebody clicks on it.
Clicking refresh and just waiting for your hit
count. Got that little, you know, 1995 hit counter on the bottom. Yeah. This page has been viewed 3 times. And then every time I hit refresh, 4 times. So, yeah, I really appreciate, you know, all the help that you guys give me. Because if it wasn't for that, you know, I can only do so much. Like, I still have to get up. I have a 9-to-5 every day. I still have to get up and, you know, hit the streets to get people to know that it exists. So, you know, with a day job and doing that stuff, like, I need all the help I can get. So anybody that mentions it, like, I appreciate. I mean, hell, just in terms of, like, you and I, like, if it wasn't for, you know, as embarrassed as I am with Radio Gangster 10 years later, like, if it wasn't for that and wasn't for all the help and support I got from you, like, half the people that know who I am and that tell me that they like my music would have never heard of me. So I owe you a huge debt of gratitude. So I don't want anyone to think that, you know, it's just me or Rick or Greg and Sarah, they're doing it on their own. Like, we all help each other out, and I appreciate it immensely.
Well, and you know, Don and I have talked about this, just like the number of, I mean, okay, you know, and I'll, you know, sometimes if I'm at, like, you know, like the signing for when Walker and Russell were doing their signing, or at one of Court and Bobby's things, or, you know, like at Aaron's, where you look around and you just, I mean, seriously, it's like sometimes, like when I was at the signing at the Bridge City, I was confused, stumped on a bridge, but it's, yeah, Bridge City. That's where Mike Russell and David Walker did their signing. It's like that thing where you hear about, like, where they won't let the president and the vice president, like, be on the same plane or something, because if it gets hit by a meteorite, you know, then it's like we're effed. Or it's like if there's a cabinet meeting, like, you know, like there's like a, like the State of the Union, like the Secretary of Agriculture has to hide in a bunker somewhere so there's somebody to run the government in case the whole joint just implodes. But I was looking around at, like, at Bridge City Comics when we were there, and it was like, seriously, if there had been, like, if a car had just plowed through that place, like 90% of Portland's creative community would have been gone. I mean,
yeah, they were all in one room.
Twitter for Portland would have just stopped. I mean, there would have been no one in Portland to tweet about anything. It would have been Anna Griffin at home going, everybody's dead.
Yeah, I'm standing there in line, you know, with the Sean Levy and Brian Michael Bendis and, you know, and David and Cable Hashatani and the Trek in the Park guys.
Seriously. And, like, and then I go to get in line and I'm between Courtney Hameister and Chelsea Kane. And then, of course, Cable, who, as we've learned, is the overlord of all things in Portland. He is the he's the Zelig or the boilerplate of he's the force that binds the universe together.
He's the nexus of all things.
I love Cable. He scares me, though. I get the feeling that he's,
you're right to be scared.
He is an overlord, and I he hasn't shown me why he's an overlord, so he hasn't, like, hit me with his magic powers, but I know that he is all powerful.
He doesn't show it unless he has to.
I like that.
Sort of like a monkey witch.
Yes. That's awesome. And I don't plan on giving him a reason to. Like,
Pray that you never learn.
I like Cable. I don't want to learn the hard way.
But we've looked around at those events where we've just, you know, we're, it's just, it's, it's, it is, it is, it's awesome, and also, like, you know, very, you know, humbling and kind of the best, where you realize just how many goddamn talented people we know and how talented they are. I mean, that's the thing. It's not just that, you know, like a lot of people who do stuff, or who, like, you know, everybody knows a guy who's like in a band, or everybody knows a guy who's like putting videos online, or everybody knows a guy who's doing this, or somebody who's doing that, or a woman who's doing that. But it's that we know people who are doing those things and that they're all doing them like exceptionally well. It does. I mean, it does seem to defy the laws of probability almost. So
it blows me away. And it's still really self-contained, like outside of Portland. It's really difficult for me to get people to understand why I like it here and why I feel like I fit in. And because especially like with my immediate family, well, there are no black people out there. I'm like, you know, I can't just go places where there's just only other black people. Like, it's like the world's only so big and we're only 15% of the population. Like, there's only like four rooms in the country I can go to where it's all black people. I mean, it's just funny to me because it's...
To be fair, though, this is like something like statistically the whitest big city in the United States.
But I will tell you this much, like, which is hilarious.
Are
at the same time,
are you thinking the world's like a game of Risk where they have to wait for like a square to turn the right color and then they can jump?
That's how they talk about it. Yeah, it's like, why Portland? Like, well, why would you want to go back there? I'm like, you guys,
where will you live?
You guys don't understand it. Like, you know, I feel comfortable here with everybody that I know, and there are so many people that are on the same wavelength that I am that it's technically home for me. And
you have to show them some kind of a Venn diagram where, like, the blackness is over here, and then there's the geekiness, and then there's the music making, and which things overlap.
Yeah,
which.
They never seem to get it, and I lost my train of thought, but it's just something that if you're here, you get it, but if you're not here, it has to be explained to you, right, as to why this is a place that works for all these creative people.
Well, Jesus, I mean, so we're here yesterday. And then we'll get some other stuff, and then we'll you know, wrap it up and let everybody. You have an actual life, and you know, like a job and things.
This is one of the few days when I don't have all that stuff kicking me in the backside.
Excellent.
I took the day off, planning to go around and tell as many people as possible.
Yeah, you're kind of doing the circuit because you were on Court and Bobby on their show.
Yeah,
this morning.
Yeah. And then this is my week scheduled on Geek in the City.
Excellent.
So I did Fun Employment last week. So
later he'll just be standing outside on the sidewalk just telling people.
Where do I go?
I was leaving yesterday, around 4, and it was like, I was getting ready to leave, and so Don was leaving to go over to Cascadia, which is like its own hive of talent. I mean, to do, you know, Ham-Fisted Radio with Bobby, you know, and with Jim Willig, you know, and so that's like its own nexus of just brilliance over there. And then on the way out, it's like Sarah and Greg, you are not only doing the Fun Employment thing, but they're also like, you know, they work for the NBA.
Yeah.
You know, when they're not here, just like swilling down a whiskey, like right out of the bottle. And then I talked to Sarah and Greg, and so then we ended up walking outside, and as we walked outside, as they were, you know, they were going to go take a smoke or whatever, and as I'm leaving, I'm talking to them, and then, like, Bill Oakley from the goddamn Simpsons just shows up, and it was just like, where am I? Like, you know, yep. It feels like that sequence in Pee-wee's Big Adventure where you're on the back lot, and it's like every time you turn a corner, it's like there's
somebody,
you know,
new.
Yeah.
And I remember, okay, it dawned on me, because you made the point that this is statistically the whitest city in America. Which is true, and I don't necessarily have a problem with that because I went to private school, so I'm used to being the one burnt Rice Krispie in the box. So I'm comfortable with that whole concept. But
it's a black man who made that joke. He's allowed.
Absolutely. And
frankly, you strike me as a man who knows how to make that work for you.
Absolutely. Republican
father, huh? Yeah. I wonder how we could piss him off.
Yeah. One of the things that... This is a message to all black people. All black people, please turn up your radios right now.
Wait, hold on. I don't have my black alert. I'll find it. All right.
I'm your black alert.
Okay, fair enough.
I will say that this is one of the few cities that I've lived in that no matter where I go, I never have to feel like there's an issue with me because I'm a black guy in a city. Like, this is the whitest city I've ever been in, and statistically in America. But I don't go anywhere in this city where I feel like, oh, I'm getting the black treatment again. Like, Detroit is 80% black, and just about everywhere you go outside of the city of Detroit, you get that from whatever suburb you roll into, whatever neighborhood you roll into. You get that feeling from a lot of people. But this is one of those cities that it's another reason why Portland is awesome, is that I don't ever get that feeling going around town and hanging out in different places. I never feel like I have to be cognizant or aware of the fact that I'm black wherever I am in this city.
Well, it's what you said about people, if they don't, and this sounds so pretentious, but I think it is true that there is a distinct Portland vibe. live. And if people aren't here, it is difficult to explain. But I think that's why so many people who will come here either to work on a project, or they'll come here because they know somebody who lives here, especially a lot of artists, where it's like the Shins or whoever like came to visit like the Decemberists guys or whatever. And it's like, well, that's great. I think we'll stay here, you know. And then like Johnny Marr from the Smiths and all those guys, yeah, who did, they just kind of come through town and then they just kind of go, well, this is great. Let's never leave. And I think there is kind of something very distinct in the air. So you can find out more about Star Pilots Lament at the website of the same name. That is starpilotslament.com. And the CD comes out next Tuesday. That is June 7th. And then the listening party is this Saturday, June 4th. At the Space Room. I'm going to hand you this, okay, right here, and then I'll prepare. I was going to try to prepare like a bed like for each item on the list. I didn't get a chance to do it, so I'm going to have to find. I'll find like a generic sort of. I'll find like a generic sci-fi bed, or in fact, I could just use some of these fantastic instrumentals I have of this wonderful album, which is coming out next Tuesday.
Please do. How about
June 7th? That's great. I'll do that.
You got the. You got the Engage My Warp Drive instrumental?
Why, yes, I do.
Awesome.
You're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Don't forget to join us tomorrow when our guest will include Mr. Big Jim Willig. He'll be here with another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101 tomorrow. Did you see his email for tomorrow?
No.
Big Jim Willig tomorrow, Humor Me, Comedy 101. Tomorrow,
oh, I did,
The
I
Muppet
did see
Show.
That. Yes, The Muppets.
We'll be discussing The Muppet Show. All right, without further ado, here is your top five.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, fire.
Counting is wonderful, counting is marvelous, counting's the best thing to do. Counting is happiness, counting is ecstasy, I love to count, don't you?
By the way, I should note that, and I think I did this to Dawn too, it's, when I first saw the cover art for this, I was like, Dawn, you gotta check this out, it's the best cover art ever. And I was showing it to my wife, and this is obviously. So this is your face inside
that, that is my face.
And I was showing this. And I said, check out this awesome cover art. And she just said, with some sort of an inflection and tone that I didn't pursue any further, she said,
yeah,
is that a real bulge? And I just said, I don't know, baby.
Yeah, I put my own junk on the cover.
She actually just goes, but no, really, are those his? I mean, is that really him? And I was just like, maybe, I don't know. Go ask him. I mean, he'll probably.
You know, I've gotten the questions about my face. I've gotten the questions about the photoshopped six pack on the character.
No, she went right for the junk.
What? I'm not answering questions about my junk at the listener party. I just want to get that out here right now.
I understand. It's not Rick Emerson asking.
You'll just have to walk up to him and stare at his crotch yourself.
Yes, honey.
Yeah, feel free.
All right. I can just stay at home. Stay at home and lop off my testicles. How about that? That'd be great. All right. Here's your top five. So this is these are the top five star pilots in your estimation.
Yes. And I'm sure this is going to cause some anger and frustration among
you've done well.
The geek masses. But then again, it wouldn't be a top five if that didn't happen.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
So,
all right. Dawn Taylor.
Honorable mention. We seem to have a tie. Benjamin Sisko and Ripley.
Yes. Now, I'm going to explain why those two are honorable mentions. Ripley is more or less a pilot as we understand it, but 99% of all of the action that involves Ripley never takes place with her piloting anything.
That's true. You don't really actually see her in that capacity except at the beginning and end
exactly.
of the films.
And Captain Sisko does not get to be captain without being able to be a badass pirate with a goatee.
No, it's true.
A pilot with a goatee, I should say. No. So, but the problem is, he's now the head of this station, which, again, doesn't necessarily require him to pilot anything. So, while I have no arguments about the fact that Captain Sisko and Ripley are both massive badasses, we don't see them enough as pilots.
You see them out of that mode
exactly.
most of the time. I hadn't
exactly.
really thought about that. By the way, can I just say, so the, it's just a little, a story inside a story. So when we were negotiating and signing the deal with Penguin for Zombie Economics, it's on an imprint that's called Avery. Originally, by the way, just as a side note, I never really got to tell this story at the time, but they were in the process of merging two of their imprints together, and so they basically went under one into one office, one staff, one whatever. So it ended up being like a flip of the coin which imprint we were going to be on, because they were merging them into one unit, and it was very, very nearly we were going to be put up by Gotham Books, which like for just like a day and a half it was going to be, you know, Zombie Economics from Gotham Books, that which was just like brilliant. The best thing ever. But then the our agent emails us, he's like okay, so it's going to be put up by Avery Books, but for a minute I thought it said Avery Brooks. Oh, I was like, that's awesome. Yeah. Avery Brooks is totally... Oh, crap. Never mind. It's not Avery Brooks.
That's awesome.
Damn it. All right, these are the top five star pilots in the opinion of Mr. Keelan King.
Number five, Jason from Ice Pirates.
Ice Pirates.
Yeah.
I think that's like the third Ice Pirates reference I've had in like, I don't know, maybe 2-3 weeks that I've heard somebody make. So there's some sort of a renaissance or something for Ice Pirates happening right now.
Say, blood, y'all want to suck some titties?
I have... Hello, everyone. Hello, Cheryl's mom. I don't think...
Hey, that's in Ice Pirates. Don't blame me.
I don't think I've seen Ice Pirates in... I mean, it's been years. Years and years.
That movie, it's bad, but it's bad that makes it brilliant. In that, it's a lot of the stuff that goes on is completely ridiculous. Like, who's going to go through a time warp, become a 90-year-old man, beat a fleet of giant robot machines, and then have a baby that comes in and saves the day? And then go back through the time warp, yet none of the robots that they destroyed come back. They're all young again, and the baby's back in the womb.
And I seem to remember that Ice Pirates came out, so there was like this sort of this trilogy that it came out around the same time. It seems like Ice Pirates and then Space Hunter Adventures in the Forbidden Zone, which was in 3D and starred Molly Ringwald, and then Buckaroo Banzai, I believe, came out at around the same time. And so those films like drift together in my head for reasons that I can't quite explain. So whenever I get ready to reference like one of those, like, you know, like Space Hunter, I always have to make sure that I'm not accidentally referencing Ice Pirates and vice versa. Which one had the robots kicking each other in the junk?
That was Ice Pirates.
Ice Pirates.
So Ice Pirates, also Ron Perlman.
Yes.
Also had a black robot.
Yeah. Boy, I need to. Name I wonder if that's
Percy.
Also Space Herpes.
Is that the inspiration for the cop on Futurama, the robot cop, where he's always going, "Oh yeah." I wonder if that's like an Ice Pirates thing.
I don't know.
Because they've got the wackily mismatched, you know, like the Beverly Hills Cop sort of robots, but they're all, you know.
See, the listeners were all shaking their heads like, "What?" And then when we started talking about it, go, "Oh yeah, that was pretty awesome." Yeah.
Ice Pirates.
Number four.
Maybe fire up the Netflix.
Carmen, I don't know. How do you pronounce her last name? Ibanez. From Starship Troopers.
Starship Troopers, which I have seen lamentably few times. That is really like a... It's not a hole in my geek knowledge because I've seen it, but that's one of those things that I keep meaning to go back and watch again, and then I just don't for whatever reason.
That's one of those Paul, I believe...
Verhoeven. Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of his classics along the same lines as like Total Recall and that such, where same kind of effects that follow through all of his movies. Right. But that was like the first movie that I saw that actually played out like a live-action comic book. And they just went balls to the wall and had a blast with it. And it was meant to have some serious parts, but it was totally ridiculous. And they totally, it was kind of like that wink, wink at the audience. Like, we know this is ridiculous, but we're having a blast. And seeing that in the theater was one of the most fun things I've ever seen.
Well, and also, there's just a lot of weird social comment in that film that I can't speak about.
Well, that's what Verhoeven does, though.
Yeah, yeah, because we've talked about this before. He makes sort of these parodies of American films and America's sort of like weird fascistic tendencies, and he kind of threads it into these movies that don't seem to be about that on the
surface.
It
lines up very well with, if you were to watch the two movies side by side, it lines up very well with Total Recall.
And in a similar way, Starship Troopers, I always am thinking of it almost as bookending Showgirls, because they both are very similar in the ways that they are completely over the top and were marketed as being mainstream popcorn movies, but in reality they're just filled with like a lot of sort of very European loathing for the very popcorn movie that it's pretending to be.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's a great thing about Verhoeven, is that he can actually just package up our own culture and just, you know, but is he's just sort of whizzing on it and then
feed it back to
sell
us.
It back, yeah, to us, yeah, for like $9 a ticket,
well,
which is kind of
just
awesome.
She's just plain hot. Like, you can, like, she is clearly the hottest star pilot on the list.
Well, and also, Starship Troopers predated the Battlestar Galactica remake.
Right.
And Carmen was sort of a precursor of Starbuck in that she that Verhoeven was, and I guess, I mean, I haven't read the book, but it's Heinlein, tried to show us a future in which maybe gender roles were not as defined as they are now.
Yeah.
And you had, like, kick-ass women just serving side-by-side with guys, to the point where he even has this somewhat gratuitous shower scene in the movie,
yes,
where everybody showered together.
Which is
basically
awesome.
To have...
Oh, yeah, mister, there's boobs. Why do you need to go looking for
it? Hey, it's still awesome. I don't have to go look for it. Like, hey, it's also in the movie.
It's so Verhoeven, though, because on the one hand, it's like, look at how, like, their nakedness does not bother them, and they don't even notice it, and it's not even an issue as we're ogling them.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah,
no.
So...
No, I approve.
Number three, Han Solo.
So these are the top five star pilots. Han Solo. I don't even know where to...
There's not much... I mean, who else would charge into a room full of 100 star troopers and then turn around and have to run back? Like, I don't know how to describe it, but it's like the way Harrison Ford did Han Solo was the only way I could ever see that character being done. Like, I don't know any other actors that could have taken that character and done anything different. Like, I can't see him with a different attitude,
right,
with a different mannerism. Like, he is perfect within his universe as to how he is supposed to act.
You know, and even, and it this is so much of a Lucas thing, too, that it's like, if you look at the words on the page, if you just read the Star Wars, you know, the New Hope script, I mean, it has its sort of thrill ride, like, serialized dramatic and sort of, you know, the popcorn elements to it that are enjoyable. But it is so much with Lucas. The thing about Lucas is it's like luck of the draw. It's like whether he just gets actors who are A, good, and B, feel like acting that day, as opposed to, you know, goddamn the young Obi-Wan, Ewan McGregor.
Oh,
who just sort of, you know, goes to work and, younglings, they're dead. That's awful. Okay, when can I be paid? And then he leaves. And it's like, those guys, you know, Natalie Portman or any Liam, where they can all act, they just chose not to act that time.
But I would argue that his direction of actors is so poor that he managed to make almost all of them look bad.
But that's what
movies.
I'm saying. It's like, it's like luck of the draw whether an actor, without any direction or guidance, just manages to either figure it out themselves or just lucks into the one thing that is brilliant. And I don't know which it is with Harrison Ford, but you're right. It is all about the delivery, because if you picture anybody else there, you know, and obviously we've had the endless hindsight of seeing him in that movie for 30 ever, you know, the years. But it's also that just he knew just instinctively how to be that guy. Because the thing about Han Solo is, not unlike Vader himself, Solo is the sort of, he's like the grit in the pearl that makes, the grit in the oyster that makes the pearl, you know, because otherwise it would just be, all of the characters would be just so one-dimensional. And you can sort of argue that Han Solo is one-dimensional in the fact that he is kind of, you know, he's a pirate, but he's, you know, but he's far edgier than anything else in the film, and he is the one, along with Vader again, the era, he's the one bit of unpredictability and menace in that film that really makes it work.
And he's the one thing that, if there ever was a, I guess what you'd call a subsequent Star Wars series, that if he came back as like 60-year-old Han Solo,
I'd totally watch
that. He would not miss a beat. Like, he would be perfect, and he's probably the only character that could come back. You know what? I take that back, because I think at this day and age, I think Mark Hamill would be able to be a much more grounded, much more stable character at his age.
Right.
But I can't see Han Solo being an older version of himself and failing.
No, like, no. I mean, that's not even about Harrison Ford so much, I think, as it is about, it's Harrison Ford as Han Solo.
Absolutely.
Because it was, you know, it was a little touch and go with, you know, when he, you know, in you know, even leaving aside the rest of the film, just his performance as Indiana Jones was, you know, from moment to moment, was either good or bad for me. But you're right, as Han Solo, which is just, and Han Solo is one of those things where it's just lightning in a bottle. Again, because it's Harrison Ford, who can act, but he's not always good.
Right.
And it's that character, which is an archetype and which is powerful, but which is sometimes done poorly. And in Star Wars, which is a great entertaining film, but which does not, like, fire on all cylinders all the time. I mean, there's much about Star Wars that is not all that well done, strictly speaking. But it's just, Han Solo, though, is just, he's just this weird aberration of just gold, of brilliance. And I guess I hadn't really thought about it in a long time until you mentioned him. And, of course, you know, without Han Solo, I mean, you know, you don't get guys like Mal Reynolds, who, you know, where obviously Han Solo made such an imprint and such an impact on a whole generation of writers and filmmakers. Because he was, I think, the first time in a long time you'd seen that kind of character, that guy, you know, given a major role in a major motion picture.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
Wow. Excellent.
Number two. These are Keelan King's top five star pilots. Number two, John Crichton. That'd be from Farscape.
I have to sort of recuse myself here because I'm not like a Farscape guy, and I know that I'm a terrible person for that.
No, you're not a terrible person, but I would highly suggest you get on Netflix and get on that, sir.
It's not that I dislike it. I have never really seen... To my knowledge, I have never seen a full episode of Farscape.
The kicker for me is that people who give me the business about Farscape love everything else that the Henson Company has ever done. They're jumping over themselves for this new Muppet movie. They love The Dark Crystal. Anything that Henson has had is, you know, the Henson Company, I should say, because this is Brian Henson.
Right.
But anything that company has pretty much put its stamp on, people have gone nuts for. Except they give me the business about Like a Farscape, which is right along the same lines with the character development, the creature work, all of that stuff. And outside of maybe like the first and second season, it comes back to being really grounded in science and technology. And that is one pilot who's not only a badass, but he's a badass who probably gets his ass kicked more than any other star pilot that has ever existed in sci-fi. But it always works. Like, he's always badass at just the right time. He's always considerate at just the right time. He gets beat to hell at just the right time. I mean, that guy, and not only that, he's not a physicist.
Astronaut?
He's an astronaut, but I forget what his discipline is, but his focus and study was on wormholes, and that's essentially what got him shot across the galaxy, was that he was conducting some tests. A wormhole opened up, shot him across the universe, and he ended up in the middle of a battle.
See, and this is one of those moments where I feel like I've let everyone down.
No,
everyone in the room, everyone everywhere.
Well, think about Farscape, and I say this as someone who is married to just a huge sci-fi nerd, who has dated sci-fi nerds, who has had lots of friends who are sci-fi, and I agree with what you said. I've always loved everything that the Henson Company has done. I was never able to get into Farscape. Farscape is like sci-fi nerd heroin. It's
yes.
It's like the pure stuff shot directly into your geeky veins.
Yes, and it's linear. So when you get to season, there's four seasons mm-hmm. total. I think a total of 88 episodes and a miniseries, 3-hour movie that closed it off. But it's linear, so in season four, you can see a reference to something that may have happened in season one or season two.
See, I love that.
And it follows through all the way through. Now, I think there was a shift in, I think, season two or three, where the character's focus is essentially to relearn the science behind wormholes so that he can figure out a way to get back to Earth. This culminates in a giant galactic war between two alien species, one closely related to humans, blah, blah, blah. So at the beginning, there was a character who was essentially a priestess, and you could tell that there was this kind of supernatural religious element in the show that kind of allowed for some more supernatural things to take place.
Right.
And once that character was killed off, it took a more scientific turn. So it gets a little bit more grounded in science and mathematics and
a reverse Battlestar.
And kind of turning the science of wormholes into first a mechanism for travel and then into a weaponized resource, which is what leads to the closing of the series. But if you start from episode one and follow it through, it is a full 4-year-long storyline that branches off to tell certain characters little bits and pieces here and there, and that, you know, the plot points kind of drag you away from the main line so that they all have some kind of gravitas to them. But from start to finish, it's linear, and it's like, I don't know anyone that, if you make it through the entire season one, you're hooked.
Okay. I know. I'm serious. I'm going to put it on my
because
I've been looking for the next thing to watch, and so I realize now that I'm
the first couple of episodes, you get through some rough character work, but I think you see that with every series.
So I would say if you can be a completist about the entire first season, you will be hooked.
It's just like one of those things that sort of lingered on the outskirts of me, like, you know, because I have like the A list of like stuff that everybody's talking about right now that I feel like I should probably watch, and then there's the B list, which is like stuff that was popular, you know, real recently, or stuff that I'm really interested in that maybe is, you know, not on the cultural radar, but that I'm really following, and then there's the C list, which is things that were long enough ago that I am not prompted to think about them all the time, but that every now and again I think about it, damn, I really got to watch it, and then I forget about it again.
What'll happen is you'll find yourself using words like frail, dren, and yachts.
Hold on, I'm gonna put this on my to-do app right
and I
now.
I get the looks. I mean, I got my girlfriend at the time hooked on it. So, I mean, to the point that where we actually named one of our puppies after a character on the show.
Nerd. So, Farscape.
Awesome. I have no excuse.
All right, there you go. It's on my thing.
Absolutely.
It'll be done. Awesome. Fantastic. We're here with Mr. Keelan King, New York Kennedy, and his top five star pilots. Before we do number one, I will just read a couple of these. Let's see. Sisko is a badass. He designed the Defiant. Don't cross him or he will slap you with his mother effing pimp hand, says Thomas Gill.
It's brilliant.
Let's see. What else do we have? This is the best show I've ever heard in my life. Ever, ever, ever. I think he means specifically today's episode. So,
this is awesome. Thank you.
It really is. We're reaching.
I'm glad I'm on the show that someone says is the best ever.
Well,
ever.
I think
it's because of you. Again, Mike Russell, this is because of, it's not like you're here because it's a great show. Great show because you are, gracing us with your presence, sir.
Because believe me, there's days when it's not.
That's most days, frankly. Today has become like, today we're like in some weird three-dimensional chess of greatness, where it's just like from every angle, no matter where you're standing, you're like, this is multi-layers of gold.
This has been built up over time. It's been a long time since I've been in studio with you. So.
I don't know why that is. Maybe I'm just a jerk.
Well, that and I have a day job, so usually
that
means
too.
I have to pretend like I want to be working.
That's true. Well,
we'll say it's that.
Well, it's like I said that thing about Kristen Bowie. Was like, well, you know, well, you got to come by and visit us. And she's like, well, you got to invite me, dick. And I felt like really bad. And I sometimes forget that we're not like, it's not like it was where we're like in a building where we like see everybody like all the time. Before we wrap all this up, don't forget that you can find out more about Star Pilots Lament at starpilotslament.com. And then the release party this Saturday, the listening party rather this Saturday, and then the release is next Tuesday. That is June 7th. Star Pilots Lament, a musical sci-fi epic. Keelan King counting down his top five Star Pilots. Don Taylor, what is number one?
Number one is Riddick.
Excellent. Of course. Of course it's Riddick.
Do I need to explain why Riddick is number one?
No, you don't.
Whose ship is this?
I'm not a big fan of Chronicles of Riddick, but Pitch Black
was
a nearly perfect
awesome
movie. It is,
and I'm exactly the
amazing
opposite. Like I thought Pitch Black was but I really like. But I don't know. I think that's just my thing for action and the interplanetary nature of the Chronicles of Riddick. Like it spanned multiple planets and multiple environments and all these different interactions with the different, you know, species and cultures and things. So I think the mix of characters in that movie is kind of what set it off for me. And he's just so much more physically badass. I think in Pitch Black, it was more kind of a...
Well, I think also Pitch Black was almost like a fake success. I think that... I don't think they quite knew what they had. I don't think they realized it was going to...
They had no idea because... When that movie came out, they really plastered Claudia Black's name all over it. And it was because of the success of Farscape that Claudia Black's name got plastered all over Pitch Black. No one had given Vin Diesel a second thought about, you know, until after that movie came out. And then when there was talk of the Riddick movie, then all of a sudden it was all about Vin Diesel. I'm like, well, and then now when you go back, if you find Pitch Black DVDs on the shelf, it's Vin Diesel.
It's huge letters, Vin Diesel.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't even know if I'd heard much about it when I went to see it. I think it might have been back, you know, again, before Netflix, before whatever, when it was like, well, let's just go to the movies and we'll just see whatever opened.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember sitting and having no idea what it was going to be and then just being floored by how great it was. Mm-hmm. And then again, for good or bad, I think it is like as they went on, they realized, like, this is the guy. This is where the money is. This is where the money and this is where the action is, which I think they're almost two separate films. If you look at Chronicles
of
Riddick and Pitch Black, they're two different approaches. It's almost like an Alien and Aliens.
They did a minor write-in to the Chronicles of Riddick to try to tie it back to the first movie, but I mean, there is no real linkage between that.
No, it's especially impressive, though, when you consider that, again, it just came out of nowhere, and it's hard, I think, to establish a character I think it's hard to make something iconic, like, instantly. Yeah. You know, something that is instantly iconic or instantly classic, even if it's just a single character, that's not easy to do. And when it happens, like with Hans Gruber in Die Hard or something, you really notice it because that's not a thing that just anybody can do. And that's, I think, again, it's like a freakish confluence.
Well, and something I've talked about for it, too, is as having worked as a film critic for a long time, there's this point when you see so many movies and you just are so grateful if something can surprise you. Mm-hmm. And that's especially hard to do with genre films because so many producers and directors don't even try to surprise you with genre films.
Right.
They just write to the template, give you exactly what you're expecting. And Pitch Black was one of those movies that was just constantly surprising. It had, and as a bonus, had the thing that Joe Bob Briggs always said, that anyone could die at any time.
Right, right, right.
And that just keeps you completely compelled and on the edge of your seat. And then, you know, usually the cliche is always, who's left at the end of the movie? You know, the hero and the girl. You know, who's the first one to die? The black guy. Pitch Black, no.
No, you can't predict anything.
No.
Yeah. And I think that was the difference between those two movies, and that Pitch Black was more horror.
Yeah,
with a sci-fi element. It was a horror movie, but, it was built in a sci-fi environment. Whereas Riddick was essentially just an action sci-fi movie. So they're two different beasts altogether.
With a much huger budget. Yeah. Just a bigger movie.
And there's another one on the way.
Really?
Yes. Vin Diesel posted on his Facebook a question about, you know, not really asking, but kind of informing his fans that they can do another Riddick movie for the money he wants, or if it's going to be rated R, he has to work for scale up front.
Oh, and sort of asking the people.
And so,
like,
he was kind of throwing that out there to let people know. And I'm like, if you can make this rated R and do more or less whatever you want, hell yeah. It's easy for me to tell Vin Diesel to take less money.
How much money do you need?
But it's like, you know, I'm sitting here on my workman's salary, so if you tell me, I'm guaranteed to get paid no matter what, and that's going to bring me more work and more money in the future.
But isn't he sitting on all this money he made making those terrible movies where he's like, babysitting the duck and stuff?
Isn't that
the hell are you talking about?
That's Dwayne Johnson.
Oh, was that Dwayne Johnson?
I think that's Dwayne Johnson. He's got the Fast and the Furious money.
Confusing black actors.
I confuse them.
God,
that's not a matter of black actors. It's big muscular guys, and some of their movies are bad.
Well, as Tyrese Gibson, I'm here to tell you that.
Here's the thing. Vin Diesel, Iron Giant. Dwayne Johnson, Tooth Fairy.
Yeah, but don't diss The Rock.
I love The Rock, too. I just, just a movie. That's, to me, it's like that. Sadly enough, now when I go to, like, when I go to my Dwayne Johnson, that's just the first thing that comes up. It's like going to somebody, you know, like when somebody calls you and, like, your picture comes up on your iPhone. That's the picture that comes up in my head when The Rock is calling and I see him as, like, with the little pink wings going, you can't handle the tooth. I don't know why. It's just because I made everybody watch that trailer over for, like, weeks. I would physically sit them down and they would have to watch it. So, excellent. There's the top five star pilots for Mr. Keelan King. Find out more at starpilotslament.com. And I've been given that as the website, but is that the sort of one-stop shopping website for you? Is that
Yeah,
you
pretty
wanna...
much, because I have a separate website of my own, but basically what I wanted to do was get the information, because I have two versions of the album. There's the standard, which just has the album tracks by itself, and there's the deluxe, which has all the instrumentals and the physical CD and all that stuff. So I wanted a place to kind of explain that to people while also being able to get people who wanted to either join the mailing list or get information on the listening party, all that stuff. So I wanted to set up one location where they could do that, and then it will take them to wherever else they need to go.
Okay. And by the way, you are thinking of The Pacifier,
which was indeed Vin Diesel and did have a duck.
I'm just saying. I'm reading.
I was right.
I'm just reading crap off a screen. I just pass stuff along. All right. It's time to end this. And so forth. Okay. Never has anybody been so happy to identify a movie with Vin Diesel babysitting a duck. Really, you have owned that niche. That's your category,
by
Don
the way,
Taylor.
And if I have time this evening, sometime before the weekend, I'm going to be working on a T-shirt that just says, "The boobs are the puppet."
Excellent.
Brilliant.
You are listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program, and we thank you for joining us today. Join us tomorrow when our guests will include Mr. Big Jim Willig, who will be here with another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101. Tomorrow, talking about the work and legacy of the Muppets and the assembled Muppeteers behind them. So that'll be tomorrow. Our guest today, Mr. Keelan King. Find out more about him and Star Pilots Lament at starpilotslament.com. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network. I above the Milk Packing District. District in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. As always, we thank you for your fine support. Please do spread the word. It is Thursday, June 2nd, 2011, and that is The Frequency, Kenneth. Thank you for listening. Be safe. See you all tomorrow. Bye now.